TheSideshowCountdown.com.
I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Casey.
We're going to see you guys next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
All day this Tuesday on 101 The Riff. It's Super Tuesday with your Detroit Red Wings. Keep it on 101 WRIF for twofers from your favorite artists all day. Along with your chance to win tickets every hour to see the Wings take on Tampa Bay. See the Wings face off with the Lightning November 30th, 7 p.m. at the Joe. Get the Coke Zero family pack for only $54 and you'll get two tickets, two hot dogs, and two soft drinks. Call 800-745-3000 or visit DetroitRedWings.com. Red Wings Hockey, presented by Amway. Listen and win every hour starting at 11 a.m. with Ann Carlini. From your Detroit Red Wings and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. To WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Hi, Jolene.
Peter.
What a
happy
week.
Happy Sunday, yes.
So, I think we say that every single week. Yeah.
Yet another what a week.
I wonder if it occurs to people that we may be in another period, politically, socially, like the 1960s or the 1930s.
Absolutely. And there are still those naysayers. Well, those occupiers aren't doing anything. And what did Newt Gingrich say? They need to take a bath or something.
Yeah.
Get
well,
a job and take a bath. Okay.
A few weeks ago, remember I was quoting the Jefferson Airplane song. Oh, is it Volunteers? Is that one? But they're, and Grace Slick sang something about we're dirty, this, that, and that. And she said, everything they say we are, we are.
Yeah.
You know, and what we're talking about, people are all, and is, are there people that don't know? Maybe. Maybe we should just recap, make an assumption.
I think everyone's heard the word occupy in the last 2 months.
All these occupy sites, what we've seen this week is the revenge of the 1%. That they've sicked the armed force of the state and
the armed force of money,
the mechanism that defends big money. And who knows? I'm sure most of the police don't even want to do that. On Wednesday, was it Wednesday or Friday? Friday, there was an Occupy Detroit and union protest at the city county building because we'll talk about that terrible day for Detroit. Going to be 1,000 jobs cut by February. So there was a union presence there. There was also demonstrations all across the country on bridges talking about the poor state of the infrastructure. Remember the bridge in Minneapolis, Kalunk?
Yeah.
Well, the roads are bad, the bridges are bad, all of this stuff in the wealthiest country in the world. And that's because the 1% have hogged it all. They don't want to spend it on things like bridges. They want to keep it all in Scrooge McDuck safe.
Yeah, right? Without regard whatsoever about anyone else.
And we always say, I mean, they have so much money. They have more money than God. Why?
That's coming from you. That's saying a lot.
And so why do they want to keep, why wouldn't you think they'd want safe bridges? I mean, don't they travel over the bridges? Couldn't they be mousetrapped in some bridge collapse as well as the poor folk or something?
Bridges are pretty much equal opportunity.
Yeah, collapser or collapsee or whatever. Anyway, so I was down at the city county building and they had police out there and I was standing on the lawn, you know. Well, I was lucky I didn't get pepper sprayed, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
this officer comes up to me and says, "You need to get off the lawn."
And I love that I don't know this story yet.
And I said, okay. And then he looked around and he said, "I agree with you 100%.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So,
wow.
I mean, he was told, in other words, he probably wanted to be fighting crime somewhere or directing traffic somewhere. He didn't want to be telling demonstrators to get off the lawn.
Yeah, for these demonstrators who are actually fighting for him.
Yeah. So, but he was told to go there. Someone ordered, and make sure they don't go on the damn lawn.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, and if they get on the damn lawn, pepper spray
them. Protect the grass.
Yeah, right. So what we've seen all across the country is the revenge of the 1% against the 99%, the occupiers, who had set up these encampments and from there had created a narrative, created a dialogue that we haven't seen in 100 years. I've said that a few times, and some people have said, well, what about the labor movement of the 1930s that really stretched through the 1950s when there was a great redistribution of income? In other words, the employers, instead of calling out the National Guard and the police to shoot workers down, this is in the 1930s and all that, they said, okay, we'll make a deal with you. You can become part of the middle class. We'll actually give you a weekend. We'll give you the right to organize. We'll give you a minimum wage. Benefits, health. Yeah, all this stuff. Wow, amazing. Because under capitalism, no one had ever had it. If you didn't like it here, I mean, and these insane libertarians still say the same thing. Well, if you don't like it there, go work somewhere else. Well, there was nowhere else to work that had a better condition. So that was put in to place institutionally, both the private contracts between unions and employers, but also the government, which said, hey, you got to pay people a minimum wage. And guess what? Instead of sending granddad to the poorhouse, we're going to have Social Security. Communism, socialism. You know, I mean, because the right wingers, the same people you hear with the same drumbeat today, they were saying the same thing 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. But the real challenge to the money power, the fact that it controls government by buying it, hasn't happened in 100 years. So this we have this to thank the Occupy people, regardless of what you may or may not think about their personal habits or whether they need a haircut. I mean, I haven't heard that yet. Hey, get a haircut. Yeah, but right. They are some of these, you see some, get a job, you know.
They're really rude.
Yeah.
I had a girl in one of my classes that I take, and she came up to me, and I had my Occupy Detroit pin on my bag, and she said, Julian, you know I'm not a liberal like you, and she kind of says it jokingly, but I think she means it. What does that all mean anyway? She's very young.
Yeah. Right?
So I explained it to her, and in the end I said, it's about really what you keep seeing, the 1%, the 9%, and I said, darling, you're one of the 99%, and she goes, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and plus, she, like all students, are going to leave the college courses with a huge debt. And in fact, I was going to get to that later. Is this on the bottom here? Oh, yeah. English students fighting for education for the 99% met with heavy policing. Guess what? Police arrested in London 20 people on November 9th when thousands of students marched through London on Wednesday in the latest display of anger against the conservative-led government's austerity measures.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the latest because these students keep coming up and rising up here and there. They pop into the streets.
Yeah. Protesters in London held up banners denouncing steep rises in tuition fees. Now, this again has this 1% in Britain that controls the majority of the wealth, and their signs read, education for the 99%. Others echoed the anti-capitalist message of London's Occupy movement outside St. Paul's Cathedral. Take the wealth off the 1%. Yeah, let's do it. Not all of it. I mean, you know, we could say, you know, make a real commie thing, take it all.
I think sometimes people wonder why I laugh at some of the things you say, but it's because of the faces you make. I wish people could see them. You know, they're like, what was funny about that? Why does she laugh all the time? Well, it's his face, I'm telling you. We don't want a camera.
I got a funny face.
No.
We get a webcam in here.
No.
No. But listen, if Rush Limbaugh can do it, we can do it.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
Wait. Who's messing with my screen?
What do you mean, who's messing with your screen?
Well, look at it. Oh, no, wait a minute. What? I must have the wrong screen here because...
I don't know what you're doing, Peter.
I'm going to have to deal with this in a second.
I'll come over.
All right. The students are angry at government plans, which they argue amount to privatization of higher education and last year's decision to hike tuition fees and cut attendance payments for poorer teenagers. So what's happening in London? They're saying, wait a minute, you can't raise our tuition fees. You can't saddle us with this huge debt. And why in the world, there's been a little inkling of this, why those of you who aren't students or are going to be students aren't involved in a movement like this to say, we want to erase all student loan debts. We want free tuition. Okay. But by the way, we haven't even gotten into our usual top-of-the-hour thing. You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. It's The Riffs. public affairs program. That's why you're not hearing the great riff rock and roll for a couple hours on a Sunday night. Our number is 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. If you'd like to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Short messages appreciated. We have a Facebook page, lots of good stuff there, facebook.com/nightcall. And we want people, you know, can't be friends because it's not set up, but you can hit like. The more, the better. We have a podcast available at noon on Monday. We'll have interviews that I've recorded earlier at 1 a.m. Okay, so it is the revenge of the 1%, and this was coordinated, by the way. There was this conference call of all these mayors where you've seen this forcible removal of people from these dreadful, dreadful encampments, right? Because there were, you know, you ever see, there's this nutball Republican congressman from Long Island, Peter King, and I saw him on somewhere on CNN, I forgot which show, and he was saying they were living in their own urine and feces, and then he went on another thing, and they were living in their own urine and feces. And, I mean, who knows what he was talking about? I mean, when then they had this this other man on Van, what's his name? Can't even think of what it is. Van Jones, yeah, that for a while was in the Obama administration. And he was laughing. He was saying, you know, I've been down there. They're not living in their own feces. In fact, they're making this extraordinary effort to keep things clean, right, down in the camp.
But, I'm back.
But let me, did you find out what's happening?
I think someone in engineering from home is working on the computer. Are they done? Have they left it alone?
Yeah, no. But, all right.
Okay.
But here is the thing. Whatever, and you know, and this is such a diversion because there is one single thing that is important about the Occupy movement, and that's its message about the dominance of wealth to the detriment of the 99% of us. Even the police brutality that we've seen. And remember, again, they were sent there. Some of the cops acted out a little bit more than was professional.
Oh, boy.
In other words, they were mean son of a bitches, to put it quite
frankly. California.
Everywhere. Especially. In New York, there is this shot of this absolutely enraged NYPD guy. I mean, throw away your NYPD caps, by the way. I mean, you're really identifying with a brutal and corrupt police force. It's not worthy of respect in the slightest. What?
Well, and you're not talking about every single officer.
No. But you know what about
good ones, right?
About rotten apples spoil the barrel? You know, here you
sure,
go.
Sure, that's true.
Listen, anytime you have small percentages that wind up defining a whole, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, remember we were talking about crime in poor neighborhoods. 98% of the people there don't commit any crimes. 2% do, and you have a crime wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to think 98. That's pretty good. Well, it's not good. You need like 99.999 to live in a, boy, this is, I'm looking at this screen. There's so much weirdness on here. I can't believe it. Anyway. So it was a revenge of the 1% and the attack on Occupy Wall Street, the mother of all Occupies, was ordered by Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the 12th richest man in America. And, at huge expense, you know, and kept the press away, cleared the airspace above it.
Yeah, I mean, actually put a lockdown on the press. I mean, that talk about freedom of speech and things like that, they weren't even allowed inside to document it because Mayor Bloomberg knew it was going to get ugly.
Right, it was.
It's like when they wouldn't allow any filming of the bodies coming home from overseas.
Yeah, and the New York police just purposely trashed everything.
Yeah, and including, which makes me so sad, is both of us as readers, their library, they had over 5,000 books people read, and they threw them away.
Yeah, let's extend that a little. They had set up, I mean, it was sort of like an alternative community there. Among other things, I mean, they had medical facilities, educational facilities, a huge cooking facility.
Yeah.
And they also had an Occupy Wall Street library that had 5,000 books there, and the cops threw them in this big trash dumpster.
Yeah, it's awful.
And I talked to somebody from PM Press. You can go to pmpress.org, pmpress.org. I should have put that on my website. And also from akpress.org. And these are the kind of, you know.
Publishers
that have material that the 1% don't want you to read.
Can you just imagine the cops are just like this? I know what we'll do. We'll destroy their books.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, and some of the stuff that didn't get much play in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Protesters occupying the former Chrysler building were arrested by law enforcement officers wielding guns on Sunday evening. These guys came in full militarized armor and carrying rifles with scopes on them. I mean, scopes?
Yeah, really? What are you, in the woods? What are you, in the jungle?
Yeah, I mean, or in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Or on top of a tall building?
Yeah, Stephen Greenslade said not a single person in there had any weapon or anything. Was at the scene and said he had a gun shoved in his face. There was a rumor that the police were going to come and ask people to leave. And so we see this over and over and over again. And, of course, what really caught everyone's imagination was the most recent abuse of police power, where out at UC Davis, University of California, Davis, California, it's I think about 70 miles north of San Francisco, this video, which has now been shown
It's all over.
200,000 times.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over Facebook. It's everywhere.
So this cop comes up. Well, here, let me see if I can read some of the video of a tense standoff between police and Occupy demonstrators. You know, the only people that were tense there were the police.
Yeah.
And this is always the case.
And you can see it on the video until it gets crazy.
You go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Shows an officer using pepper spray on a group of protesters who appear to be sitting passively on the ground with their arms interlocked. You know why they appear to be sitting passively?
Because they were.
Because they are!
Right.
So where's the tense standoff? Here, tense standoff, protesters who appear to be sitting passively. In the video, the officer displays a bottle before shaking it up. It probably says on it, shake before using, before spraying its content on the seated protesters in a sweeping motion while walking back and forth. And this is not one of those little things like you get at Joe's Army Navy. You know, this is this huge canister.
It is. And it was like he was fertilizing his lawn.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Now, get this. Some members of the crowd gather at the scene, scream and cry out. The crowd then chants, shame on you, as the protesters on the ground are led away. The officers retreat minute later with helmets on and batons drawn. It's not clear who used the pepper spray. They now know the name of the guy, but the police said, we're not releasing the name. In other words, everybody else's name gets released, but you can't release this guy that's armed to the teeth because somebody might hurt him. I doubt that. Officers from UC Davis and the other UC campuses, as well as the city of Davis, responded to the protest, according to Annette Spicuzza, UC Davis police chief. Spicuzza told the Sacramento newspaper that police used this pepper spray. Thank you. After they were surrounded, protesters were warned repeatedly beforehand that force would be used if they didn't move. And Spicuzza said there was no way out of that circle. They were cutting the officers off from their support. It was a very volatile situation. Go look at that video.
Look at the video. In fact, what I'll do after the show tonight is I'll post that on our Facebook page.
And you tell me if they're surrounded. And if they were surrounded, they were surrounded by 20-year-olds that were wearing sandals and T-shirts, and these guys are armed to the absolute max, right?
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
So if these are grown men, 35 years old, who are frightened of 20-year-old college students, you need to get another job.
Right.
You know?
Isn't there another way to do it?
Yeah. Well, that is the deal. And that in so much of in this society is where is the possibility of other deal? Where is the respect that people can get for carrying out First Amendment guarantees, even if they're doing stuff that is out of the ordinary?
Like interlocking arms and sitting on the ground?
Oh, you know what they were blocking, by the way? A sidewalk on the Diag. They were,
and
the police ordered them to move.
A sidewalk.
Yeah. Why can't you sit on the sidewalk? Why can't you sit on a sidewalk to make a point? I don't get, I mean, is there anything going on? And one of the things that ought to work in this, we talked about this last week, the police unions, if you really care about protecting citizens, ought to start making some public statements about, we don't want to do this. And we don't want to come armed like this. We don't want to strike fear into the hearts of our citizenry. When we show up, we want them to say, oh good, they must be here to do something good. Remember, you can always tell who's there to create a riot by how people are dressed.
Yeah, that's true. And it is time for them to speak up. It really is.
Yeah.
Just like the officer who, even though it wasn't a public statement on television or anything, he looked at you the other day when he had to tell you to get off the grass and said, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, like
it's,
to hear
it's kind
from
of probably like paycheck or speak.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, because I wonder what would happen. I mean, unless these guys like doing it, I'm sure some of them like it. You know, because most of us, if you say, here are, you're 35, 40 years old, and someone says, there's some kids, and I'm, you know, by the way, I don't think you're kids when you're 20 years old. And if you're taking part in the social fabric and political decisions of this country, you're not diminished in your status by calling you a kid.
Yeah.
You're an adult. You're a full citizen. And someone says to you, I want you to go spray this stuff in their face. You know, or maybe he was just a volunteer. Maybe he thought, good, I get these little son of bitches. I hate them.
Because they have a sign-up sheet.
Yeah, they have a sign-up sheet. Who's the meanest son of a bitch on the force that's going to do it? Because I'll bet you 90% of the police in Davis, California don't want to do that, don't want to hurt people. I mean, did you see that 84-year-old woman that got in Seattle? Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely amazing. All right. Also, in Detroit, according to Mayor Bing, Dave Bing of Detroit, announced that 1,000 city positions will be slashed by February to save $14 million. So, he said, if we don't, there's going to be less services. Well, there's going to be a couple things. One, you're going to have 1,000 more people unemployed in Detroit.
Yeah.
And they have families, right?
Oh, yeah.
And those are people who are going to be spending that much less. So this is part of the spiral downward.
And then Friday night, so I think we should really tie it in because
okay.
We're talking about the cops
yeah.
as well, is that 16 Detroit police officers at the Northeastern District didn't complete their shifts Friday evening, Peter, which you knew about, obviously, as part of an apparent protest over this proposed 10% pay cut as well, in addition to the 1,000.
Why don't we get Mayor Bloomberg of New York to just write a check? I mean, what's,
we keep, I don't know why. We should actually maybe write him a letter.
There's a $45 million budget shortfall. If in Detroit, and that's why all these people have to suffer all these deprivations. And by the way, you fire 1,000 people from city positions. I wonder how many foreclosures that's going to create. I wonder,
yeah.
you know, how many less merchants are going to be shopped.
Yeah, the
whole domino effect. So Bloomberg could write a check to the city of Detroit for $45 million, and he was the now he's the 12th richest man in America. And if he wrote a check for $45 million, he would be the 12th richest man in the world, in the country.
Right.
So he wouldn't
no
affect them at
biggie.
All. You know? I mean, if you're making, pardon me, I don't know, you know, $8-$9 an hour, you're not going to go out and spend $50-$75 a person, like, you know, you and your pal or your wife or your companion, right? Because, you know, you're not going to spend $100 on dinner. But someone who's got a lot of money, they don't even think twice about that, you know, $100, something like that. So, here are people in Detroit that need more, and they're getting less. And what did they do? What did they do to hurt anyone? What mistakes did they make? I mean, through their union, did they want to have a living wage? You know, some of these union people make $22,000 a year.
Yeah.
This is union.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where once that position was.
No, no. With the union, with the benefits, they're making 22 grand a year.
Right. No, what I'm saying, whereas once that job was paid a lot more.
Oh, yeah. But the point being, some of these people that are working custodial and all that, there's not a. They're pretty low paid to begin with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So let me see if there's anything else in here. Oh, yeah, that's what you were talking about. Yeah, everywhere I have it, you know, about Bing saying he'll push for a 10% pay cut, called for givebacks of $40 million from city workers. So Figure that out.
Things were bad.
Yeah.
And
I got on here, too. I write, Bloomberg, write a check.
Right.
Boy.
I don't know. He's just, he doesn't really budge on that whole thing.
Have I told you tonight how much I hate this guy?
Yeah.
The 1%. So it's the revenge of the 1%. And that's what we're looking at. I'm having this dueling mouse with...
It's a situation that I need to call engineering, actually. So you do have three phone calls. You can take them cold if you want. The girls are going to write down their names and where they're coming from.
I got here on the screen.
Oh, it's on?
Yeah, yeah.
Are they done with the computer?
No, they're still messing with it. Here is... Ooh, maybe this isn't going to work. No.
Do it from the board, Peter.
Do it from the board, she says.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I wonder if other talk shows have this.
Yes,
here is Martinez in Detroit. Martinez, welcome. Are you with me?
Yes, hi.
Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Martinez?
Hey, great. My name's Juan Martinez. And,
Martinez.
Juan Martinez.
Juan, okay.
Juan Martinez. I've been a part of the Occupy Detroit movement
since
it started.
What's going on?
Around the 13th or so. Well, there was a couple of things that you all had talked about, one of which was, you know, the student debt piece. I'm kind of an oxymoron out there, like, you know, in terms of the people, the young people that make up the Occupy Detroit movement. I graduated high school. I never went to college, but I have like two and a half jobs.
Okay.
And I feel like it's a really difficult time for someone who's kind of gone through the typical career, you know, like career path.
Yeah.
To try to find a place in the society at this point. And I feel like, you know, people with more like out of the box kind of skills.
Okay.
Are actually like in high demand.
Like as in?
Well, like my job is, I work with a group, called Detroit Summer, which is a youth organization that's been around for 20 years.
Right.
We got a contract with Real Media to do, which is an organization in Southwest.
Okay.
To do, in school, like a journalism program, teaching, you know, digital media skills to their young people.
Oh, nice.
And, the teachers at the school are really excited to have us, you know, do stuff in their classrooms. And, you know, I just feel like there's like so much opportunity in that. And I mean, part of that is because, you know, obviously the school system is really inadequate in Detroit. So, you know, they sort of seek out people with sort of real world experience and skills to, you know, to impart that to the.
Hey, well, Juan, tell us what's happening with Occupy Detroit, because we've heard that, they're leaving the Grand Circus Park encampment.
It's true. It's funny because, you know, there's been a bit of a debate going on in terms of like, you know, do we keep the park? Is the park like a deeply symbolic? And to me, the park was like a really great start to, you know, to some awesome movement building.
Yeah.
A lot of different, Detroit's been doing anti-poverty work for decades, you know, like there's so many awesome organizations like Moratorium Now or
Hey, Juan, do this for me. We actually always have to keep these calls fairly short. So what I really need is kind of the headlines. There's talk of Occupy Detroit's going to be moving to like permanent quarters in a building, but yet continuing the same sort of actions and sensibilities.
There's a warehouse. There's a storefront in Southwest, 5900. Michigan Avenue. There's also 1225 Woodward, which we're working on getting together, getting that cleaned up and usable. There's some residential spaces that people have offered so that our people, like a lot of the, there's, you know, a lot of the homeless guys in the park like stepped up and, you know, bottom line security and we're working in the kitchen.
So it's not, so Occupy Detroit is not going away.
Not at all. Actually, we're kind of just like regrouping, making sure that our people have a, you know, a place, they have, you know, food and shelter, so that we can continue to organize throughout the winter. I'm really excited because I'm putting together a Radical History of Detroit workshop.
Oh, that's good.
Cool.
Because nobody knows history.
You better invite Peter because he has a thing or two to say about that.
Officially invited. It's going to be sometime in the first half of December. I'll call in again when the details are worked out.
Well, right, you know what? I have to say, going from the park to some type of a building is probably a good idea. It's going to be pretty cold.
It's getting me cold. All right, I'm going to cut you a little short, Juan, but you know, feel free to call in every week, give us a report, and I got to get some other people on the air, so thank you very much.
Certainly will. Thank you.
All
thanks,
right.
Juan.
Bye now. Yeah, I mean, they're, and from the people I know, I don't know Juan, but other people. I mean, there is so much to talk about probably maybe I should do like one of my interviews with him.
Yeah, with Juan?
Yeah, well, or somebody like yeah, sure. I mean, because you know, it there's so much to say. All right, here is Mike in Madison Heights. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, is this Peter and Julie Angeli?
Yeah.
Wait. Hey, it's nice to meet you. I'm not trying to be funny, but it shouldn't be called Peter Angelian, not Peter with Julian. It's kind of sexist, in my opinion.
No, it's not called. It's called Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan.
Well, it shouldn't be Peter and Julian Jordan at the same time. I mean, that's kind of sexist otherwise. Well,
whatever.
I don't understand.
Onward.
As a feminist, I have to say right now, I don't even get this.
In 2010, there's been 28,708 automobile deaths. So, you know.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Am I right? I
mean, you are right. You got to look out for those automobile deaths, man. That's those will kill you. Actually, they're not accidents.
That's true.
Because
they happen.
Well, that's called an accident.
Well.
But here's what I mean. They know that. I mean, if I said I was going to introduce a machine into society that had some benefits. A
couple of tons, though.
They say, have any drawbacks? And I say, it'll probably kill about 32,000, 33,000 people a year and injure about 4 million and cause about $40 billion a year in property damage.
Wait, it's probably also going to pollute the planet.
Yeah. Let's go. All right. We're going to have a little our regular feature on religion when we come back. Tim Tebow.
There they go again. Yeah.
All right. Stick with us. If you're on hold, stay there, and we'll get you when we come back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julian are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is going to get worse, much worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. And if you owe the IRS back payroll taxes, chances are you will be visited at your home or business by an IRS agent. Don't become paralyzed by fear. Take action now. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help. Our team of experienced tax attorneys can get you protected, stop collections, and negotiate a permanent settlement with the IRS and state, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. At U.S. Tax Shield, our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. No games and no tricky upsells. That's why we have an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Put an end to your torment. Get protected. Get the shield. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-656-9393. That's 800-656-9393. 800-656-9393.
How do you get the most satisfaction? For some career-minded people, it's when they work toward a goal and reach it. The same may apply to you when preparing for your career. In fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design, you need knowledge and skills to get started. That's why you should call ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Call 800-741-5123. ITT Tech's program are designed to help you develop skills and knowledge to pursue your career interest. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So pick up the phone right now and call ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
Jeez, Kim, it's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Hello?
Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicapped parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's Housing Discrimination Hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Monthly payment calculation assumes 5% down at 7% APR over 30 years.
You know what happens to a beautiful four-bedroom, two-story house when the owners default on their loan? Some private bank becomes the new owner. And when a mansion in the hills is confiscated due to unpaid taxes, the government takes possession. But the government, the private banks, they're not in the real estate business, so they want to unload these houses as fast as they can, sometimes selling them for substantially below market value. Imagine finding a great three-bedroom, two-bath home for $28,000. That's just $180 a month. To learn how to get a free list of foreclosures, call now, 1-800-388-1084. CRN is offering a home rebate of up to $1,000 in cash, and you can find out how to get up to an extra $2,500 on top of that. Call in the next 30 minutes to learn how to get a free list of foreclosures that may be in your area. 1-800-388-1084.
Peter and Jalene, you're listening to Night Call, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIX.
All right, if you are ready to testify, our number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. That's the first time I've said that. This show, we've been so busy.
And
your phone calls are what is most important, of course, outside of our words.
Well, we are talking about the Occupy movement, the revenge of the 1%. The mayors all got together on a big conference call and said, let's move these son of a bitches out here.
Except I want to tell you what. Mayor Virge Bernero in Lansing, Michigan.
Who should have been the governor of Michigan.
Yes, who should be. He's one with the occupiers. He said, you can stay here. And I was listening to one of our buddies who does a talk show, Tom Hartman, and he said, this is an example of what every mayor in every city should be doing, what Virge Bernero in Lansing, Michigan is doing. So here's to Virge.
And one of the things that I, as usual, didn't finish one of my points about that these right-wingers are saying, oh, this happened near there, and this happened at this encampment, and that insane Representative Peter King said they're living in their own urine and feces.
They just love it. I'm sure. Have you been down there to see it firsthand?
And Well, people that have would just say, of course, to occupy Wall Street. They have said they're crazy. But you know that old kids thing is, what does that go? I'm rubber, you're glue, everything you say about me bounces off me and sticks on you. And so if you go to any of these sites where there has been problems, any of these Occupy sites, and there, I mean, of the thousands of sites, and then the couple of dozen charges, whatever happened, like in Oakland, there was a murder near one of the Occupy sites, and they said that perhaps the guy had actually been at the site, and it was some domestic thing.
It was unrelated.
But, gee, a murder in Oakland, California. How unusual.
Yeah. That doesn't happen.
Has there been, I mean, there's been, these kind of come and go. I don't even know if the right-wingers make it up. There'd been a rape. Wow, a big city and a rape. I mean, that's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
But nothing that happens at these encampments that aren't, don't have a greater expression in the society as a whole. Because here, people are joining together for a common cause. And the idea that people are living in filth. How many poor people in New York City are living in filth? Because it's run by the damn 1%. People like Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who's the 12th richest. Did I tell you tonight that he's the richest, 12th richest man in the country? Don't we, did you want to read this email?
Oh, sure, yes. Steve from Farmington Hills wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Newt Gingrich was quoted this weekend as saying the Wall Street occupiers should go look for a job after they first take a bath. Maybe Newt can use his influence to get some jobs at Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac.
You know, that's about it. He was his lobbyist for the... This is the loan guarantee folks that have some problems, to say the least. But Newt was part of it. He got at first $300,000 for advising them. And they said, in what capacity? He said, as a historian.
Gee, this guy. And, you know,
he's now number one among the Republicans.
I know. And he's the one who, this is how sad it is, right? He's attacking people for personal hygiene, things like that. Well, isn't he the one who, what was it with the dying, was he the one with the dying wife, or was that, I can't keep these creeps straight.
You know, he, on his website, apparently he denies that the fact that he served his wife with divorce paper.
While she was dying of cancer.
Well, yeah, I don't know if she did die, but she was in the hospital for cancer. And
I think she died, didn't she?
I don't know. I mean, let's spread bad rumors about him. What the hell? Let's take some more calls. 313-298-WRIF. You're with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on Night Call. Here's Randy in Westland. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just talking earlier. I heard you talking about the police and the unions and stuff and how they need to realize that these are people just like them and stuff. And I just wanted to remind you of what happened in the Philippines in the 80s with Marcos. When they kicked him out, they had a totally bloodless revolution out there, and the military refused to take action when they were ordered to attack the people. And I think the police ought to be thinking along those lines.
Well, I think it's pretty hard for right now. I mean, there you were at a revolutionary situation, and it was like a crossroads in society, and I don't think we're there yet. So whether or not a local police, I mean, here in Detroit, the Detroit police deal with the occupiers in a very benign way. They're dressed in regular clothing. But as I said earlier, they're ordered to that scene. They're ordered to break it up. They're ordered to dress like that. I mean, I can imagine in probably California could still be hot. Who the hell wants to wear all that equipment? And it's absolutely unnecessary. I mean, so what we have is this militarized police force that came about or across the country because of the drug war and because of 9/11. But we're not dealing with terrorists. We're dealing with our fellow citizens, and a lot of them pretty young. Because, you know, one of the things, have you seen that video of that cop pepper spraying those students?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you know what? If you watch it again, I don't think anybody, I don't know, I noticed it, so maybe other people.
It looked like the cops had them surrounded.
That was just total BS. And what if they were surrounded? Could you imagine being, you know, armored like that, having clubs, a gun?
You feel pretty safe.
I'm surrounded by a bunch of 20-year-olds with sandals. What'll I do next?
What'll I do with all this stuff?
Yeah. But there was one young man, when he saw the spraying, got up and walked away. Because he probably, after they started spraying them in the face, and every one of those people sitting there on a sidewalk inside of the campus, hurting no one, blocking no one, and if they were blocking anybody, guess what? The people could have walked around them. And one person walked away because he was frightened, and the rest of them showed such incredible bravery and commitment.
It.
And this cop, what a, you know, I have to watch my mouth so I keep a career here. What a coward. What
he's in trouble, though.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's criminally prosecuted for a fact.
Yeah.
Talk about that. We haven't talked about.
Go ahead.
There are repercussions. Hasn't
he been has been suspended.
Yeah.
There is also, and I think you can get to it, if you go to my website, PeterWerbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and click on the photograph of them doing it, and you can find a video there when the chancellor or the president of UC Davis, who they're blaming, you know, she was the one that said, yeah, she ultimately is responsible, and there's calls for her to resign, and where she was surrounded by hundreds of students, and she was fearful to go out. And then suddenly someone said, you know, these people aren't going to hurt you. And she walks to her car, and there's hundreds of people there, and they completely quiet. You can hear her heels clicking. My wife was in the other room. I was playing this, and she said, what's that noise?
Oh, wow.
And they just gave her this silence of condemnation that was so incredibly dramatic. And this is the nature of it. The police are the ones that have initiated violence. I mean, they're the ones that have created the cost. They're the ones that have disrupted society. And why in the world this New York's mayor Bloomberg, did I tell you that he is the richest, 12th richest man in
yeah,
the,
right.
why they would subject New York City to that so they wouldn't have people camping is so far beyond me. All right, Randy, thank you so much. Appreciate you being on the show. Here is Matt. Matt's in Warren. Hey, Matt, you're on the air. Welcome. Hey, Matt, are you with me? Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
How are you?
We're good.
First of all, I want to say thank you for representing Occupy Detroit. And I don't know that many people know this, but you've been a supporter of progressive issues for probably at least 30 years, am I right?
50.
Well, yeah.
60.
60 years.
No, I'm only kidding.
This show's been around for about 40.
The show's been on the air for 41 years. Yeah. Different host, so anyways, but thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm a huge fan. Now, I really appreciate you supporting Occupy Detroit, but not many people know that the Jews would have you believe that 5.9 million people died in the Holocaust, but, I mean, come on, is that really true?
What, man? If you're some Holocaust denier, you have not been listening to me. Yeah, it is true. Thank you for calling.
There's very few times when I'm speechless.
Well, wow. I don't know.
I think that was a lead-in. That was like a passive-aggressive fake kind of thing.
Yeah, I do, too.
Yeah, lead-in. Yeah, Thanks for doing all that. Yeah. But blah, blah, blah.
Well, if anybody,
Good job.
There's a number of, usually we think of what prejudice does to the victim.
Okay.
I mean, the greatest expression in
the
modern times is what was done to European Jewry, right? I mean, virtually annihilated them. Or what prejudice is done to African Americans or what have you. Or different periods in our history, Irish or Italian or whatever. But it also has an effect on the person that holds that. And that holds that prejudice because they have to have a cold spot in their heart, which means they don't have a warm, full heart.
And they have to live that.
And rather than focusing on problems in some sensible manner, they're off in la-la land with, thinking it's all this particular ethnic group or racial group. And, so they can't think straight.
Yeah.
And they wind up, and the main thing is they hurt people, but they lack the capacity. They lack the capacity to
have any compassion whatsoever?
Well, no compassion, but be part of the solution. They're part of the problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
How about Heath and Deborah Campbell? This is the New Jersey parents of three children with Nazi-inspired names. They lost custody of their fourth child 17 hours after he was born. Hans, H-O-N-S, Campbell was taken into custody by the New Jersey Division of Youth and Family Services. That wasn't so bad.
It's because...
But, well, they said that it wasn't because of their names. You got other kids. The Campbell family stepped into the spotlight in December 2008 when a ShopRite grocery store declined to decorate a birthday cake for their son, Adolf Hitler, Campbell's third birthday.
Unbelievable. Oh, I mean, come here, little Adolf. Come here. Come to mama. Yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
So the state took custody of little Adolf along with his sister.
Oh, Adolf.
Joyce Lynn Aryan Nation Campbell.
Oh, my gosh, these people.
And Hans Lynn Himmler Jeannie Campbell.
That is scary. Yeah.
And a spokesperson for the agency said, we would never remove a child simply based on their name.
Oh, I would.
Yeah.
In this case, I would.
But besides saddling somebody with that name, I mean, that's child abuse right in itself.
I mean, in high school, I went out with a guy whose last name was Twit. You know what I mean?
Come on.
Yeah. He was also 6'5" and went on to become a big-time football player in college.
He said, my name's Twit, and they would look down at him.
They added a T. When he went to play in college, his coach added a T, so there were two T's, so it didn't look quite as bad.
So it was T-T-W-I-T?
No, T-W-I-T-T. But, you know, I mean, there's one thing in having a name like that and being made fun of, but it's one thing, like you said, to be saddled with this just hate name.
Yeah. Connected to that was the state of Nebraska refused this vanity plate where you can get what you want on it, and somebody wanted to get NE 420, in Nebraska 420, and as many of you know, that it refers to April 20th, the pot holiday.
Well,
the holiday, because 420, it's April
California.
April 20th. At 4:20 p.m.
Oh, well, it's California police code for marijuana as well.
Well, it also, there was somebody, what's the name of that?
From what I understand.
The Wallies, isn't that it? This is like 40 or 50 years old.
I don't know this one.
Yeah, I think it was the Wallies. Maybe someone remind me about this. But it turns out that 4:20, probably unbeknownst to this pothead, also is the date on which Adolf Hitler was born.
Oh,
not Adolf
really?
Hitler, Campbell. But Adolf Hitler, the real one, in 1889.
The
yeah.
real scary one.
And worse, that was when the Columbine High School Massacre was in 1999. Mm. Yeah. In Venezuela, they really named their kids crazy stuff, too, like Taj Mahal Sanchez. I was just reading this, Elvis Presley Gomez, Darwin Lenin. And like in V.I., not in John.
Oh, okay.
And even Hitler Eufemio, that was a name. How do you get such a name? I'm extremely proud, said Mao, like, you know, the
chairman.
Chinese dictator. Mao Pino Delgado, explaining how he had recently looked online at Wikipedia to read up on the man who inspired his name. Mao Zedong, his name was Mao Brezhnev.
Oh my God! What is this? I don't understand.
This is the man's name in Caracas.
I know, but why?
I don't know. He found an example of Mao's signature. He said he learned a bit of calligraphy so he could sign his name in Chinese. But all these names are all over. Some of my they're actually unpronounceable.
I mean, it makes Hugo Chavez, that name, sound pretty normal.
Yeah, well, it is. It's very, all right, let's see. Where are we in the stack here? 313-298-WRIF. Here is Scott in Canton. Scott, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, great. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, did that one happen to leave a phone number?
No. Why?
I would love to talk to him.
You know what? I think you can just go down to the encampment at Grand Circus Park, which I think tomorrow is the last day. Monday, I think they have to be out of there Monday at 10.
Well, it was supposed to be a week ago.
Yeah, they got a week extension. Yeah.
Well, they're forcing us out downtown Detroit.
Yeah.
They're planning. If you go down there and talk to them, or if you're on Facebook and look up the Occupy Detroit, they keep in constant contact on there. You can find out. But we'll be able to tell you probably next week.
And also, if you go to my website, which again is peterwerbe, WERBE.com, there is a link to their website. And as one was saying, there's some, I don't know, diversion of opinions.
Oh, well,
that some people want to stay regardless, but it is nowhere, the encampment is nowhere like it was a couple of weeks ago, which had huge tarps done. They were blown away, and these riggers from the Stagehands Union, the IATSE, what does that stand for? International Stage and Theatrical, something around. But, you know, showed them how to put all the people from the IBEW, the electrical workers, set up electricity. Yeah. And so it was
a group effort.
But it's I was down there on Friday, and it's maybe 20% of what it was.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, they're getting ready. Most of them are getting ready to leave in any event. Speaking of which, so Scott, just go down there, check them out. Or if you want to, if you're missing all this, just email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. But, and thank you so much. Appreciate that. Let me get one call in before we take our break. Open lines all of a sudden. Here's Jerry in St. Clair Shores. Hey, Jerry, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Jolene.
Hi.
Hi, Jerry.
I just wanted to comment about the police officer asking you to get off the lawn.
Yeah.
I equate that with the prison guard escorting the prisoners to Auschwitz, saying, well, I really don't want to do it, but it's just my job.
You know what? I guess I don't think that's fair.
It's a little different.
I do, because, yeah. I mean, if these people aren't willing to risk losing their jobs to you, are we supposed to believe the mantra that they say that, oh, it's the thin blue line risking their lives every day? If they're not going to risk their jobs for us, why should we believe they go so far as risking their lives?
Well, let me just reset what we were talking about. I was down with some friends, some other people protesting against this Bing decision to cut 1,000 jobs, cut everybody's pay by 10%, and also just the whole Occupy Detroit perspective in general. And a police officer came up to me and said, could you please get off the grass? And then he looked around, and then he looked back at me, and he said, I support you 100%. I got a much more positive spin on that than you do, Jerry.
Well, you know, we go back to the – you're familiar with the union women movement and the
– I've heard of it,
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, in the free press strike down at Mound Road in Sterling Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's the police union that was paid the overtime by the newspaper organizations to break up the strikes.
Well, it was. And here, I mentioned this just a couple of weeks ago. The Macomb County Sheriffs took out an ad in the newspaper of the strikers saying, we support the right to strike. At the same time, they were ordered to clear the driveways because the strikers were blocking the trucks, trying to stop them from delivering the paper, which they did pretty well. So the point being, I mean, I think that's easy to say that you know, people can risk their jobs, particularly in an economy like this. People aren't going to do it. I mean, I'm sure that there's probably incidences of individuals. In fact, there was a Philadelphia cop at Occupy Wall Street that was denouncing his brother officers in the NYPD for doing what they did.
Well,
but I think at a minimum, as I said earlier, Jerry, that local police ought to intuit from what's going on in other places what they may be called upon to do. And they could take a stand and say, look, we recognize the right to strike. We recognize the right to occupy within reason. And we do not want to be set upon our fellow citizens in a manner that is destructive to the trust that we'd like to have between them and the community. We don't want to hurt people. We don't want to bring out all this cop equipment and be dressed like we're, you know, from Star Wars, you know, the evil empire. That's not us. That's not why we got into this. And if they wait until all of a sudden the 1% says break up Occupy Detroit or break up Occupy Lansing or Flint or whatever, then all of a sudden, you know, they're going to be the enemy. And that shouldn't have to happen because, you know, we're all in the 99%. All right, Jerry, thank you very much. Give me some calls on that. What do you think? You know, and I know a lot of police officers are listening, and they're laying low. I mean, I'd like to hear from you guys well. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jolene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked and paid Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive Social Security disability benefits. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411 for a free consultation. Our company has the experience to help you work through government red tape and file the required documents. Even if you've been denied before or currently have a hearing pending, call us at 1-866-946-4411. There's no fee until your benefits have been approved. Remember, if you've paid your Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, your condition may qualify you for disability benefits. For a free consultation, call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411. That's 1-866-946-4411.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-507-3949. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-507-3949. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-507-3949. That's 1-800-507-3949. 1-800-507-3949.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-916-1059.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-916-1059. 1-800-916-1059.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlower send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever, and the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com. Secret code FAST.
Attention. Attention.
Attention.
Rosetta Stone invites you to be a part of its biggest language learning event in history. Because in 2011, we want to help 3 million people learn a new language. That's why we're going to give you an absolutely free demo of our language immersion technology. Call 1-800-522-1164. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the Rosetta Stone solution is easier than ever before. For your free demo, call 1-800-522-1164. 1-800-522-1164.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. We're talking, as we have been, about the Occupy movement, the revenge of the 1%. The mayors all got together on a conference call and decided, let's sweep these people out of here. I don't think they're going to be able to stop an idea whose time has come.
And like we're not just talking about it. We've been a part of it.
Yeah. And did Mr. Announcer give the phone number?
313-298-9743.
Indeed. If you'd like to join us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/nightcall, and you have to click like. We, in about 12 hours, will have our podcast available. Thank you to Athena and Sarah, who we didn't thank or introduce
tonight.
And
Jeremy, who always puts it up for us the next day.
Yeah. And Jade, who always helps us.
Oh, yeah. Well, we need Jade. I want to say hi to my cousin Teresa, who's listening out on the West Coast. She's never heard this show.
Wow.
I know. Now you know.
Yeah.
Now you know how crazy your cousin is.
2 weeks in a row, we've actually gotten snail mail.
I know. I like the snail mail. I like most of the snail mail.
Yeah. You can just send it to me or Jolene, care of WRIF, 1 Radio Plaza, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from Carl, a longtime listener.
He writes, say personally, hi to Carl. I enjoyed your letter.
Yeah. He talks about this news article he wrote. 5,000 people line up for a Nissan battery plant in Murfreesboro, Tennessee to get 1,600 jobs. The job will pay an average of $12.50 an hour with benefits. This $12.50 will pay for heat, lights, insurance, car payments, clothing, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, Easter, etc. The question is, will these poor people vote against their own interests?
Well, there are
the white ones will.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, so many people do. And, you know, it's just, it's really easy to explain them if they would just try to figure out what it's all about and figure out that they're not in that 1%. They're crazy to vote for these other people.
Well, also, on my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com, there's tons of stuff. There's these videos of this Davis, California police officer, maybe even a UC California, the University of California, Davis police officer pepper spraying these students. And
at close range.
At close range, yeah. And they were talking, and in Seattle, there's this incredible photo of this 84-year-old woman. She's 4'11", by the way.
A little teeny thing.
Little teeny lady. In all the years I've been doing radio, I've never had swear words form on my lips. So
I don't know how
frequently.
That's happened.
It's all just, and there's a great article called Militarizing the Police, How the Drug War and 9/11 Led to Battle-Dressed Cops Cracking Down on Peaceful Protests. And they all have been peaceful protests as well. I mean, when you start pushing people, sometimes they get a little
angry.
Yeah, yeah. At 1 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to be interviewing Kathleen Sharp. This is an interesting story about this prescription drug called Procrit, which has just killed all these people, and it's still out there. And the book is called Blood Feud. Also, Sally Howell, who's a prof at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, called Arab Detroit, 9/11, Life in the Terror Decade. She describes what life has been like in for our Arab American community, Middle Eastern community.
The people living in Dearborn, you mostly mean? Or?
Well, I've thrown this out before. The city with the highest Muslim population in the country is?
Is Dearborn, Michigan.
Nope. Hamtramck.
Oh, Hamtramck, that's right.
Yeah. And a good part of it, Bosnians and Albanians.
Right.
Yeah. So, Bangladeshi people, not even people from the Middle East. Okay, this always frightens you, so are you ready?
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
Says Jim Morrison of The Doors, the introduction to his song, the title cut of the album, The Soft Parade. Everybody doesn't agree with that, though. That I was explaining last week, that's traditional Calvinism. But other people think that, you know, if you beseech the Lord... I told that joke, didn't I? Meet me halfway, buy a ticket. Yeah, I won't bother with that one again. If you missed it, too bad.
Don't do it again.
So, I mean, when you watch both country awards and a lot of R&B singers, whenever they win these awards, they say, first, I want to thank Jesus.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Now, there was an award show on tonight. I didn't watch it. I was preparing for the show, but I'm sure there was some of that going on.
Do these people really think?
I think so, Peter. Yeah.
Well, Tim Tebow, the Denver Broncos quarterback, let me say this. He's now wearing his jersey that on the back, instead of his name, it says Jesus. Now,
can you do that? I guess.
Well, I was wondering whether you can do it. And the other thing, usually have your name there, but instead have Jesus' name there. Are we talking
dedicated
or delusions of grandeur? Something like that.
Oh, yeah, but that's going to make him, you know, get those touchdowns.
Yeah, this prayer warrior at Baltimore's Rising Sun Baptist Church, Rocky Twyman, has he spearheaded such previous movements as Pray at the Pump, Seek God's Help in Lowering Gas Prices.
Did that work?
Well, it worked.
Did it?
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, they're down about $3.29, although gas, the oil is now going over $100 anyway.
But we know that had nothing to do with it.
So he's calling for President Obama to emulate Tim Tebow now. And you're even talking about Tim Tebowing, getting down on one bended knee and lowering his head in prayer after touchdown. I don't know. I mean,
so he wants the President of the United States to do this when we have a thing called the separation of church and state that we go on and on and on and on about on this show. I can't even believe this.
But the answer is simple, according to Rocky Twyman. Tebow gives God glory for his success, and God in turn blesses him. So now why is he being a big capital H, why is he not blessing the defense of the other team?
Well, that's true.
Maybe. You know, I mean, aren't they praying to God? I mean, what is with sports, and particularly football, and religion? There's always all this stuff. High school sports, our pals at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org, they're always filing suits saying you can't, I mean, you know, the Supreme Court has held you can't have prayers at public schools. I mean, that was kicked out 50 years ago. Get a life, folks. You don't need it. And
if your religion is full enough for you in your life, you go to church, you pray. It's your personal thing. It has nothing to do with school. And it's, you know, sports, fine. They can do their little thing at the end of it. I don't care.
I mean, I wonder how he, with a big capital H, decides. So he's beseeched from all around. I mean, if every soul singer and country saying, why do they always wear their hats inside? I mean, anyway, never mind. They always wear their hats, those country guys. They come up to the mic and they all have those
Their big hats?
Dumbass hats on.
Oh, because you say it's not polite to wear the hat inside?
No, I know. Now everybody wears... wait a minute. If you wear a big cowboy hat, I'm not trying to give you a hard time or tell you you're bad. I think it's a pose, you know. It's all... I don't know,
part of their costume, Peter.
Yeah, it is a costume. All
right. They wear your little Occupy Detroit pins around.
Yeah, they're fellow performers. Yeah, okay. I should give them... But, you know, what is it? All hat, no cattle, right?
Yeah.
All right. But things aren't going well for them. Maybe we shouldn't even bother with these folks because they're apparently having a hard time, at least in Detroit, filling empty pews. This church on Woodward, the Metropolitan United Methodist Church, it had a membership of 8,000 in the 1970s, down to 500 now. Why don't you close
gosh.
Up? No major denomination has bid harder than the United Methodist Church. Membership in the church's Detroit conference, which includes dozens of counties, including Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb, has fallen by more than half since 1970. And in
I'm one of the ones that they lost.
Okay. In the Evangelical Lutheran faith, membership in Michigan fell 20% recently, and it's going down. Well.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go back to our phones. You'd like to join in. If someone would like to explain to me the idea, why does God bless one singer and not another? Why does God bless one quarterback and not another? Yeah. Why does God bless one? In other words, he denies the defense. I mean, isn't the defense out there, you know, like praying to stop Tim Tebow?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God, please stop that son of a bitch.
I don't think that's what the
That's
prayer
not a prayer?
Was.
You don't do that in prayer?
No. Okay. You're a horrible prayer, Peter.
Yeah. All right. Let's get Fred on. Fred is in Detroit. Fred, hey, welcome. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Jolene and Peter.
Hi.
Hi, Fred.
Now, as far as the religion thing goes, it's just something that most people bring from other parts of their life, you know, before their profession, before whatever
Yeah. It
is that happens big. They, you know, they grew up with it or something, or something major happened that sent them down that road. So now it's in every aspect.
Okay.
Now, I missed your show last week, and I hate it. But I
you hate my show?
He hates missing the show.
Okay.
I was too sleepy, and I fell asleep.
Well, wait a minute, Fred. We were sleepy, but we're here, so we expect you also. I'm only kidding. Go ahead. You know, there's a podcast you can subscribe to for free, and you can listen to it on your computer, although we prefer to have people listening. Go ahead.
Who would use snail mail because I can't afford the internet.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we'll take your letter.
Letters.
Yeah, 44 cents, but probably going up.
Well, I was wondering if you have seen, if you have talked about the 60 Minutes report last week telling how members of Congress get stock tips from corporations.
Oh, no, I missed that. I'm shocked.
Honest to goodness, insider trading on Capitol Hill.
Wow. Can I tell you something, Fred? They, as you'd probably know, because we've talked in the past and you're a very astute observer of political affairs, that Congress now has an approval rating of 7%, right?
What?
Of 7%.
7%?
Yeah. But get this. Here's the other figure. When they ask how many people approve of communism, 10%.
Oh, yeah. Wait, now someone pointed this out to me, that more people are okay with communism than what's going on.
Than approval of Congress, yeah.
I mean, but we already knew that they were bought dogs. Yeah. We didn't know that they were working their personal fortunes on our dime, on our time.
Well, they do wind up making a little bit of money. You go in, this the poor man from, you know, name the state, and you come out well-connected, right?
But I thought all of that was supposed to be in a blind trust.
No, it could be. But think about Newt Gingrich, who got a one-time lump sum, $300,000, to go to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and as an historian, right? I know a lot of historians. I never graduated college, but somehow I hang with these PhDs. I mean, you know, maybe I'm their mascot or something like that.
Somehow you keep up with them, Peter.
But
they're
historians, and that's three times what a full professor makes, like at Wayne State University. So, you know, people do not pay for what they do not receive in return. So if Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are paying Newt Gingrich $300,000 as an historian, it is an investment. They think they're going to put out $300,000, but it will be more.
It'll pay off.
Well pay off. All right, Fred, thank you very much. Send that letter. Be glad to hear from you. One Radio Plaza, if you want to reach Jolene or me or both. One Radio Plaza, Ferndale, 48220. Here's Jennifer. She's calling from Detroit. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, how are you, sir?
We're good.
Hey, I'm a little nervous here. Sorry about that.
Don't be nervous.
We're nervous and we never show it.
Yeah, right. We're so nervous.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on how the police are reacting to Occupy Wall Streeters. You know, we're basically in the same boat with these folks. no one wants to wish them ill or harm them in any way. You know, they're doing their best to back these people and make everything comfortable for them. But one thing I did that really drew my attention was when you spoke about people voting against their own interests.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My police union, you know, the biggest union here in Michigan, they all backed Snyder, who I like to call White Boy Rick. You know,
tell people what that refers to. That's got a much, much deeper meaning, right?
Oh, yeah, White Boy Rick. What was that, Murder Incorporated?
Yeah, this dope dealer back in the 80s or 90s or something.
Exactly,
yeah.
80s.
Yeah, yeah, 80s, yeah.
That's my nickname for him, is White Boy Rick. But yeah. This guy has been doing everything he can to tear down, like, our medical benefits. He passed what I believe is PA Act 56. Don't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not covered, like if your union contract is an arbitration or negotiation, you end up paying like 20% more of your health care until it's settled.
Sure.
Wow.
You know, and all of my coworkers, just of course they're all allegedly conservatives, although I could tell you a little more than that, but they come off as being conservatives and they vote that way, you know, and this guy is just, you know, now he's going to be coming after our pensions.
For sure. Hey, by the way, Jennifer, maybe it's just the circles I run in, but every Detroit police officer I know is a liberal.
Right, right. Well, I'm not quite in the city of Detroit. I'm in one of the suburbs.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And actually, it's the opposite. Those of us who are quote unquote liberal, which I think of myself as an independent.
Yeah, well,
but,
us
you
too.
Know, I've been accused of being a liberal.
Uh-huh.
And we're very, very hunted, you know.
Really?
We get a lot of sarcastic comments and such. You know, they love all the Republicans, but they keep voting for them, you know, and they got angry with me when after this thing passed and everybody's health insurance went up. You know, they got angry when I was like, well, how's that working out for you? Vote for White Boy Rick. You know? and the only thing they can come back with is, well, how's that Obama working out for you? Because in 2009, we laid off officers, and I know I got demoted from my supervisory position.
Really?
So, you know, but the thing is, that was coming. That was coming, whether it was under, probably started when under Junior Bush.
But they all like to go right to Obama.
Yeah, and, exactly. Know. No one, you know, and then they're like, well, how are we supposed to know that we were going to get raped by Snyder when he promised? And I'm like, he didn't promise you anything.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, here, you know, the Rod, isn't the Rod Stewart song? I can't think of Mata Hoople, once bitten, twice shy. So you,
right.
Or as Bush tried to say, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. He didn't do real well when he tried to put that together, but that is the deal. So we'll see where these people come out. You know, I think you probably saw, Jennifer, that in Wisconsin, there were the police and the fire fighters were right out there. Same with in Ohio as well. They were right out there with the rest of their unions as they should be.
You know what, Jennifer, and this also goes to show that that the Snyder camp did a good job of convincing all of your coworkers that he had their back.
Yeah. But he didn't.
They bought a line of BS.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
All right, Jennifer. Hang in there. Fight the good fight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here's Royce in Ann Arbor. Royce?
Hey, Peter.
Okay. This is not I thought this was another Royce used to call years ago. It's not you.
No, I'm a different Royce.
Okay.
New Royce.
Yeah.
But, hey, I don't want to segue too far from the Occupy thing.
No, that's fine.
You know, you guys have been talking about that. First off, I really appreciate that thing going on. I hope that there's, you know, they got this whole thing going where there's no leader. There's, you know, there's no symbolic leader, but I feel like there needs to be. You know, you look at any type of social movement in history, there's always someone that we could tie to, you know, whether it's Martin Luther King, you know, with with the social rights and all that stuff, or whether it's Abby Hoffman, you know, with the Yippies.
Or Walter Reuther in the union movement, or, you know, Eugene V. Debs back over 100 years ago. But you know what, Royce, that this movement is in its infancy. It's not, it doesn't have a coherency other than pretty much a statement that, look, we're all getting screwed, but to the benefit of this upper echelon, this ruling class, this elite, the power elite, whatever you'd want to call it. And that's a good start. I mean, that's a good place to start from.
Well, it's been over 2 months now. So
yeah.
Well, I think it's great. You know, I think that the people that run this country and the handful of people that have that 1%, I mean, they're smart people. So they give us our pacifiers, they give us our cable TV and our internet, and they, you know, tell us that we're free, so then we don't have to worry too much. But, you know, the one thing that I did want to call about, I just moved back to Michigan, and I was out in Tennessee for a couple of years, and I just moved back, and I'm wondering why there's not more dialogue about medical marijuana and the federal prosecution of people that are that are following state laws, that are strictly following state laws, and they're being prosecuted. I have a very good friend of mine who is actually he's been indicted by the federal government. They're taking him to trial. They're trying him. And he was following every single Michigan state law for medical marijuana. He broke no laws. Everything was enclosed. I mean, I'm talking he was to the T, followed the laws. He was raided 3 times, property taken from him, his house pretty much vandalized by the DEA. And I'm just wondering why there's not more of a dialogue about this when it's the people in Michigan.
Well, I hear you. I'm not sure why. There is a bit. But here is the problem. I mean, I think that the only thing, well, actually a lot of things that I'm libertarian on, and one of them is the drug laws. And I don't think there should be any drug laws. There ought to be great attention paid to pharmaceutical drugs, which is what have you. But if people either want to, or in some cases are dumb enough, a lot of times people can't even help themselves, you know.
But to alter their consciousness.
You know, I mean, they get a little overboard in altering their consciousness, wind up addicted, you know. And to make them more miserable by making criminals out of them is really terrible. But you can't have, the argument goes, and there's something to it, that you can't have state laws trumping federal laws, because when we've talked about this in the past, it would be like all of a sudden Nevada wanted to okay slavery. And you say, okay, well, it's state law.
Dangerous words.
Or Michigan would say, wait. Michigan wanted to abolish abortion, or New York state would say, our minimum wage is going to be $4 an hour. So that's part of the concern, that you don't want this interposition of states' rights. Remember, I mean, you mentioned about Martin Luther King, that, you know, that this was the call of the South, states' rights. The states had the right to manage their affairs in the way that they thought the best. And if it meant, making second-class citizens out of a portion of their population, they didn't care.
Yeah, so, no biggie.
So I agree. I mean, I think that marijuana ought to be legal, and it ought to be dealt with the problems that are attendant to anything. You know, there's the problems attendant to with food and consumption of food, both in terms of quality and quantity, and how we deal with it in this society. Nobody talks about making food illegal. All right, but thank you, Royce. We will continue to talk about it. But
Alcohol,
yeah. I mean, that's the argument. I was trying to look. Didn't we talk about last week about how the court had blocked? Yeah, we did the graphic labels on cigarette packs. I think so.
Yeah, we touched on it briefly.
Yeah, and I guess California dispensaries moving to block the U.S. marijuana thing. I guess we did talk about it. Yeah, and that here. There are more arrests. This is from who sent me? I don't even know. Dennis, I guess it is. At calltalkyes@yahoo.com. There are more arrests for low-level pot possession in New York City, 50,000 a year, than for any other crime.
I know. I couldn't believe it.
Accounting for more than one of every 7 cases that turn up in criminal courts. I mean, here is, Mayor Bloomberg. Did I mention that he is the 12th richest man in America?
No.
Okay. And what I mean, how would you like to have justice and then find out that the courts are clogged with people that have been caught with a joint in their pocket? And one of the ways that the police found that there was a joint in their pocket is you happen to be Puerto Rican or African American and you just got stopped, because they stop hundreds of thousands of young people of color a year in New York City for absolutely no reason whatsoever. 99% of them they let go, but are humiliated, told to empty their pockets, and hey, they had a little something they were going to burn later in the evening, and then they get busted for this. So, I mean, if anybody that cares about the quality of justice, of harassment of young people, we got to get rid of these laws for sure. All right, here is Jason in Westland. Hey, Jason, you're on the air. Welcome. Did I do something wrong? No. Jason, are you with me?
That's weird. Dead silence.
Dead silence. All right, Jason, I'm going to put you on hold and go to Tony in Romulus. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. If I could just have my own personal opinion.
That's all we got. That's all we give.
Yeah.
Ours are no better than yours.
I never really understood the atheistic viewpoint because, to me, not believing in God, life itself, would have absolutely no meaning,
Why do you say that?
That's if you...
What do you mean by the meaning of life? I don't even know what you mean by the meaning of life.
Do you think you're just kind of like here and now in the present?
Be here now, yeah.
I do. I think it's quite scientific how it happened. I think there was a little sperm, a little egg, and then, bam, 9 months later, there I was.
I gotta tell you, I never understood how anybody... I mean, I'm like a third-generation atheist, so it was not... it was never passed down to me, and so it always seems strange that people could have a belief in something that doesn't seem to have any logic, that can only be accepted on faith.
Well, I base my faith on the Christian Bible, and Paul speaks that, creation itself speaks of a creator,
Wait. This is circular. You can't make proofs by citing what is under... I mean, if we're questioning, does God exist, you can't quote the Bible. I mean, you have to say, look, you're right. This isn't a matter... some people, and then I really worry about them, have spoken to God or spoken to Jesus, or they've spoken to them.
Been told to go to war.
Like Tim Tebow.
George W. Bush told me.
Yeah, that you just, I mean, they're separate categories. I mean, we live in a world of which logical proofs are what constitutes evidence. There's obviously no evidence for the existence of any supreme being, right? Hey,
do you think Peter and I are...
don't send him off on that.
Are we going to hell?
I'm not saying that, I believe in the Bible speaks of an almighty God, a sovereign God who controls everything,
Yeah.
Everything that happens in the world and in the universe.
So he, being omniscient, meaning see all, he knew when he created Adam, he knew that Adam was going to fall. He knew that there was going to be concentration camps in Hiroshima and the Inquisition.
And he knows that
George W. Bush.
Women get beaten and killed every day.
He knew all this was going to happen.
See, the point is, we have this finite mind, and we cannot comprehend, a mind that is totally beyond us,
Well, that's true by definition, but you didn't answer my question. If God is omniscient, he knew that his experiment in what is called free will was going to flop, right?
Well, the point is,
the point is, did he must have known in advance that this was not going to work out well, that humans were going to be sinful right out of the box, right?
That's
part of his plan. I mean, why did he bother?
Like a little bit of head games.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, the only thing you can say, look, this is a faith, this is what I believe, I try to do good work in the world like so many churches do, but, Christianity has let me be kind and say has a mixed history. So, and you could say a lot of people I know that are Christians, they say, well, those people weren't acting out the word of God. Well, they say they were. All right. I'm going to have to cut this short because I have to do some commercials. Sorry to do it, but I used to do this in college.
Do what?
Argue about the existence of God.
I mean, well, you haven't changed much.
No, well, I was using some of the same. I like the uncaused cause. You know, people, they say, you know, well, we used to go around. I belonged to this group called the Student Humanist Society.
Okay.
And it was affiliated with something called the American Humanist Association, which is still there. And so we would actually get invitations from Christian youth groups to come around and debate the existence of God.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we'd always, you know, just wipe the plate with them. Or is that the word? Wipe the slate?
Wipe
them out.
Yeah, you just wipe.
Because, you know, because they would try to base it on some logical proofs. And yeah. I mean, I think you really have to say, it's like the Christians I know, they say, well, I know what you're saying, and, you know, once in a while I have my doubts, but I just feel this spirit. This is how I express my sense of connectedness to the world and something transcendental. Yeah. And I try to do good work in the world, and, you know, I don't necessarily want to take their particular faith about it. But here's people, they would say, everything has a cause, right? I would say, well, I don't even want to go there. I mean, let's accept
cause and effect.
Yeah, no, just a cause. Okay. Everything is caused by something. So let's go on your premise. You know, we're this was very Tai Chi. We weren't even defending. We said, okay, and they'd say, what caused you? And I'd say, can we like skip a few ahead? I don't want to go, you know, 100 generations of people. You know, yeah, my parents did. What then? So we get to the end, and they'd say, and you know, like the universe. And it's, you know, I'd say, well, what caused the universe? And they'd triumphantly say, God. And I would say, what would I say?
What would you say?
What caused God?
Oh, God.
And they would say, with this, again, this triumphant...
So you all got nowhere.
This triumphant look on their face, he is the uncaused cause. And I would say, back up, my friend. At the beginning of this conversation, you assured me that everything has a cause.
But there's an uncaused cause?
Yeah. No. And I said, so we're going along logically, and suddenly, at your convenience, you pull the rug out of from under your premise.
That's awesome.
And then they would look blankly, like a deer in the headlights. But I'm sure...
No wonder you don't want to debate that one religious talk show host that once in a while people say...
Want me to debate him? I would love to do it, except, you know, it would work to his benefit.
And you know what? It would eat up our precious time here on the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he said come on his show, too, but he has atheists on his show. But I'd like to get, what's his name? Bob? Not Bob Barker. That's some TV talk show guy.
Who?
You know, the guy that's the president of Freedom From Religion.
Oh, Dan Barker.
Dan Barker. Yeah.
Used to be a minister.
Used to be a minister, wrote hymns.
Years.
Now he's head of this atheist group. All right. Eating a wow. All right. That's.
What?
Huh?
What was that?
What did I say?
Oh, yeah. No.
Are we on the air?
We have one half.
Oh, we're still on
left,
the air. Hey, hang on, folks. Let me see. Who's there? Brad and Andy and Mike and Renee and Dominic. Hang on. We're with you right after these.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is going to get worse, much worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. And if you owe the IRS back payroll taxes, chances are you will be visited at your home or business by an IRS agent. Don't become paralyzed by fear. Take action now. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help. Our team of experienced tax attorneys can get you protected, stop collections, and negotiate a permanent settlement with the IRS and state, potentially saving you thousands of dollars. At U.S. Tax Shield, our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. No games and no tricky upsells. That's why we have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Put an end to your torment. Get protected. Get the shield. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-656-9393. That's 800-656-9393. 800-656-9393.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar.
Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
After discovering and amassing some of the most sought-after hoards of gold coins of the past 100 years, the New York Mint is announcing the public release from its vaults of the famous $10 gold Indian, struck from 1907 to 1933. It's amazing that this hoard of coins even exists. When the nation was gripped by an economic frenzy in 1933, millions of gold coins were officially recalled and lost forever to government meltdowns. But now, the New York Mint is releasing a limited number of these sought-after $10 gold Indians on a first-come, first-served basis. Call now for free historical information. You'll also receive a collector's DVD absolutely free. Call 1-800-925-9477. All of these magnificent $10 gold Indians are security in uncertain economic times, so both collectors and investors will be eager to get their hands on this important part of American history. Act fast to ensure you don't miss this special opportunity. For free historical information and a free collector's DVD, call 1-800-925-9477. That's 1-800-925-9477.
This. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to our final segment for this Sunday night. In about 20 minutes, we'll be playing a couple of interviews I did earlier, but I want to get as many of your calls on the air as possible, so we'll keep them short. Here's Andy in Royal Oak, wants to talk about the Occupy movements. Go ahead, Andy. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, this is Andy. I first of all want to say the guy who talked about religion being related to marijuana was kind of messed up, because, I mean, I don't know if you've studied classical history, but Epicurus once said that if God is unable to prevent evil, he is not omnipotent. Are you familiar with this?
No, you, go ahead.
If God is not willing to prevent evil, he is not good. And, well, first of all, I had a guy, a friend who was who had to get
Well, there's more to the saying, but I can't react.
God.
He believed that he was born in 1899, and it was kind of crazy. He was kind of schizophrenic. He believed he was a pig farmer. He believed he raised swine.
Who's this? Who are we talking about here?
My friend Jason Mosey. Have you heard about that?
No.
I'm totally lost.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm not allowed to use familiar names or whatever. But did you know that the Holocaust was a myth?
Okay, Peter. Yeah. This guy.
Yeah.
It's like so stupid. It's not.
Well,
even
it's a waste
funny.
Time. I bleeped him up.
Move
Didn't
on.
Go away. Yeah.
Move on.
.com. Here's Brad in Pontiac. Go ahead, Brad. You're on the air. Hey, Brad.
How you doing?
We're good. What's up?
Yeah. I'm just enjoying life.
Well, that's good.
Good. What's on your mind?
We all got the things going on in our lives, and it's a positive thing. I'm a driver. I represent Detroit all the time. Like I said, originally I told her between Pontiac and Flint area, but that's where my mother was passed away. But the thing is I'm a Detroiter, 8 Mile Kelly.
Okay.
So we know that. That's a good thing.
Sure.
But I'm a driver now, and I've seen a lot of states. And tell you what, Detroit and Michigan is beautiful, and I'll get to my point here in a minute, but
go for it.
The nice thing is that they put us in the media so much, I can't figure out why ain't there other things wrong. Well, there is. there's other states and other countries that are other, well, obviously we all know this, but there's other countries and other parts of the states of the U.S. that they're, honestly, Michigan, Detroit, Flint, Saginaw are beautiful compared to a lot of places, so.
Well, I love Michigan.
Yeah, there are things.
Beautiful state.
I'll tell you, Brett, I went downtown on Friday. The reason I was down there, you know, this Occupy movement, there was a benefit at a place called 1515 Broadway. That's the address and also the name of it. And we walked out, and the place was jumping. I mean, I know that the city has real problems and that there's this huge shortfall in revenue. I mean, how you property values are so low. How are you going to even get any tax revenue out of property tax and what have you? But it looked like a thriving city. People were getting out of the opera. There were people at the clubs, a lot of clubs down there.
Restaurants.
And restaurants. It was a great scene. So, let's hear it for the Motor City. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Here is Mike in Washington Township, home of what? The Octagon House, right? Are you with me? Isn't this the same Mike before?
Mike.
It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forget about it,
yeah. Here's Renee in Royal Oak. Renee, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good.
Hi, Renee.
Hi, my Facebook friend. How are you?
Good.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you.
Where do I get started? Okay, let me address the holy war.
Sure. Which one? Which holy war are we on?
Well, I would believe that it would be the guy who was just trying to challenge you guys with the Bible.
No.
There are so many different versions of the Bible. I mean, you don't know which version is true, and I'm Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if I still believe in everything that the Bible stands for. And
Well, there's a thing called a recovering Catholic.
Is that what I am?
Yeah, you might be.
Should I be going to my meetings? I don't know.
You might be, yeah.
Yeah, I just stand up saying hello. My name is, and I don't know what I am.
Recovering Catholic.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hopefully, I'll get my token for that meeting, and I'll be able to share that with you.
Okay.
As for the Brobama, I wish people wouldn't pick on my man Brobama.
She calls him Brobama.
Brobama. I call him Brobama. I really do, because I tell you, well, I do a little tap-tap and a little peace sign when I say it, but you can't see that. Bush Jr. left him with $8 trillion of debt.
Yeah, he did a number. Well,
and a couple of nasty wars.
Yeah, I don't feel as badly for, and I'm sure you would agree, I don't feel as badly for President Obama as I do for the American people that got screwed so badly by George Bush by giving this tax giveaway to the rich and starting these unfunded wars. So this is why we're in the mess. And also, I mean, the whole trajectory of Reaganomics. I actually heard a guy in Detroit. Here's this guy. He's got some talk show on this progressive AM talk show. And he there is just running out this Reaganomics. I'm thinking, didn't this guy pay any attention to what's happened in the last 20 years?
Don't say it.
Yeah, I'm not
going
to say it.
Tell me.
Or anything. But, hey, Renee, you know, are you also a friend of the Night Call Facebook page?
I am.
Good.
She is, yeah.
Well, see, I'm very popular. I have to have two Facebook pages. I think Mark Zuckerberg hates me because I have more friends than he does.
So. My dog has a Facebook page. I think my dog has more friends than
me. All right, Renee, listen, we got to move on. We're near the end of the show. Appreciate you listening, and thanks for being part of our Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/nightcall and click the like button. Here is Dominic in Taylor. Dominic, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Actually, I just had something to say real quick, but we were on Facebook one day, and a bunch of my friends were, like, bickering back and forth about God.
Yeah.
And I came up with two questions that nobody could answer.
What's that?
One is, why is every picture of Adam and Eve, if they were supposed to be the first people on Earth, why do they have belly buttons? And every picture.
I know. Well, I've heard that before, Dominic, but is that fair?
That.
Those are paintings. And why are they white?
I mean, and the other,
shouldn't they look like Australopithecus? sort of like. I don't know. And what else?
The other one was, if everybody keeps saying, "Oh, this person's sitting there going to hell," like I haven't actually read the Bible, but I've been told that it says that God died for all of our sins.
Jesus died.
or yeah, Jesus died for all our sins.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would mean all the future sins that people do, it wouldn't matter because Jesus already died for them.
Well, that is actually there's some very obscure Christian theology that says, yeah, that if Jesus died for our sins, all the ones that people have committed are taken care of. I don't know. I mean, this religion has been interpreted over and over again, and you know how these people are, that we always think about, wow, look in Iraq about these Sunnis are killing these Shia. Man, what a primitive religion. Well, ever hear of Protestants fighting Catholics? And I don't mean yesterday. I mean, we can go to Northern Ireland and get that.
Talk about that, right?
As well, yeah. All right, thank you very much. A lot of people have died because of religion, because of the love of their God, whether, it's Hindu.
Is their God's better than your God? Yeah, my God's better than your God. And just really quick, just about maybe less than 10 minutes left in the show. So if there's anything you want to add, now's the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And this may be an incomplete name or just what the person's calling themselves, but I just see C. from Dearborn Heights. Is that correct? Just C?
Or... Yes, sir.
Hello,
okay.
C.
Hey, C. It's P and J.
And J.
P and J.
Okay. Perfect way to introduce ourselves.
Cool.
Now, you just spoke about religion.
Yeah.
Where's the big problem?
What do you mean?
I mean, as far as us being all Christian and all that.
Wait. Who's all?
Who's us?
Who's the us here?
Well, I'm assuming you're Christian.
No.
I'm not a Christian.
I'm not.
No.
Well, there goes that argument.
Crickets. We gotta have that cricket. There's tens of millions of people in this country that aren't Christians, that are atheists or Jews or Hindus or pagans and Wicca and what have you. Do you know that?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
So
it shouldn't be a surprise that we're not Christians.
Yeah.
What's the problem with that?
Shut the front door.
Oh, front door.
Okay. Is that it? Okay.
See you later.
Yeah, that's it?
But that was enough.
Yeah. What does that mean, shut the front door?
Instead of...
Yeah.
Well, at least he had the common sense not to curse on them.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We have about 8 minutes left, and we've probably exhausted people's fingers. So I have all of this stuff. In fact, well, I don't know. People will think we're. I wanted on my website.
Peter,
what?
Focus. Come back to Mama.
Okay. Too many things going on here.
Yeah.
I like this. Makana, not Makaka.
This is a singer, right?
Yeah, Makana. He sang Occupy protest songs to President Obama and the APEC leaders. The APEC is Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation. And
Makana is a popular Hawaiian troubadour.
Yeah. And
never have heard of him.
No. Well, he was just sort of local. And they hired him to sing and play his guitar in the background. And at a dinner that Obama and these other leaders were attending last Saturday night. So his songs of choice, a 45-minute montage of protest songs, all the while wearing a shirt that read, Occupy with Aloha.
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 I love that.
Yeah. After the dinner, Makana said the diners did not react in a negative way to his message and may have been too busy sampling the Hawaiian food to notice. And
that's very strangely written.
And actually, his song, let's see, I think, here it is.
Oh.
We Are the Many, it's called.
Okay.
Just going to play a little bit.
Come here and gather around the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw
We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few.
And the times, they are a-changin'. Didn't it sound a little like that? People have called him like the new Bob Dylan.
Yeah, except this guy sings in key. He's got perfect pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob Dylan had perfect pitch at one time,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, now it's just
a long time ago. Long time ago.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so that...
It's M-A-K-A-N-A, if you want to look it up.
Yeah, right. And let me see. How many hits? 202,000 just on this one. And there's also... And it's on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. .com. And let's see if we can. I was going to. We got one more. Get out of here, McConnell. Because also, remember, we also on my site as well.
He's talking to his computer, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
Oh, you getting all hippie drum circle on me, Warby?
Because this is where they buy the politicians.
David!
Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rents do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand, it's us who bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy, but suddenly of late there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here.
That's incomparable. They always say that about people they like. The incomparable David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S.
And he has a new video of that. Chris Chandler, who is a poet, troubadour.
We saw him in Miami.
Put together a brand new video of that. If you go to davidrovics.com, you can check it out there. I may even post that on our Facebook page as well. David was all over Occupy California.
Yeah.
He was at Occupy Oakland this weekend, Occupy San Francisco, all over. So check him out.
And also, we should say that was written before the Revenge of the 1%, because it became increasingly and has become increasingly more difficult to maintain the occupations because of the coordinated effort of these politicians, the sick, the police, on people that are doing these horrendous acts of camping.
Right. How dare they camp and play those drums and, you know, get all, I don't know, drum circle on it.
Well, this serious stuff, is this worth mentioning? That
what?
There is a petition, online petition, to take the Kardashians off of television.
Peter, how dare you dumb this show down at the very end of it? I don't know. Go back to the music. Crying out loud.
I mean, this is, I like this.
Oh, Peter.
What do Change.org and Occupy Wall Street have in common with the Kardashian haters? They are an organized group of people trying to get something done. In the Kardashian case, they want the reality clan off of television for good. And petition organizer Cindy Snyder said in a statement that we feel that these shows are mostly staged and place an emphasis on vanity, greed, promiscuity, yeah, vulgarity, and over-the-top conspicuous consumption. So it's not entirely.
You have redeemed yourself somewhat, but no.
She says, I'll remind you here that the Kardashian family fame largely started with a leaked sex tape. Is that true?
Well, isn't it true of all these people?
There was a sex tape
babes?
Of her?
Yeah, there was.
Who was the guy?
I can't even remember.
It's
that unmemorable because she's clearly just, if you see it, she's not that hot in bed, okay?
You saw it? You've seen all these. Like you saw Tommy Lee.
Oh, I own that one.
What is it, Tommy Lee and
Pam Anderson?
And Pam Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that they said at the time, maybe this, because I remember at the time they said that more people have seen Tommy Lee
and Pam do their thing
than any other people in the history of the world.
Well, aren't they?
Maybe
aren't they
the Kardashian. All right.
Oh, Peter, get rid of it.
We'll get rid of it. Hey, friends, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Yeah. Jolene, thank you.
You bet. Podcast tomorrow up by noon.
Yeah, today.
Today.
Today, yeah.
Thank you to the gals.
Athena.
And Sarah.
Did you have a, like a...
What?
Perry, I can't think of his first name. Never mind.
Rick Perry moment?
Rick Perry moment? Yeah, it's time for me to go
home.
There's
not a third person or a government agency.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
How do you get the most satisfaction? For some career-minded people, it's when they work toward a goal and reach it. The same may apply to you when preparing for your career. In fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design, you need knowledge and skills to get started. That's why you should call ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Call 800-741-5123. ITT Tech's program are designed to help you develop skills and knowledge to pursue your career interest. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So pick up the phone right now and call ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu. Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked and paid Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive Social Security disability benefits. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411 for a free consultation. Our company has the experience to help you work through government red tape and file the required documents, even if you've been denied before or currently have a hearing pending. Call us at 1-866-946-4411. There's no fee until your benefits have been approved. Remember, if you've paid your Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, your condition may qualify you for disability benefits. For a free consultation, call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411. That's 1-866-946-4411.
Our son would go from, "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Probably, I would be willing to bet the majority of us over 30 take at least one prescription drug. It's certainly over 40, definitely over 50, absolutely over 60, because we're a pretty medicalized population and a pharmaceuticalized, probably the first time you've ever heard that word, pharmaceuticalized nation. And usually we think it's a pretty good idea, saves us from a lot of diseases, health conditions, and what have you. Is it safe? We've heard a lot about that. What's the role also of big pharma, the big pharmaceutical companies, that intervene in our political life so much? And the main thing we want to know, these drugs that we often hear things go dreadfully wrong about, what is the deal? Aren't they vetted? Aren't they examined and make sure that they're helping us and not hurting us? Well, here's a story that may make your blood curdle. And it's called Blood Feud, the man who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever. Now, this is a story that, in one sense, is kind of narrow, but it suggests the totality. That's why I think this is so important. The author is Kathleen Sharp. She's a journalist and author of four acclaimed nonfiction books. She's written for the New York Times Magazine, Parade, Playboy, and Fortune, among many others. She's produced segments for National Public Radio's Morning Edition and has appeared and consulted on film documentaries for Turner Classic Movies, the Biography Channel, and Bravo. She's gotten a lot of awards along the way as well. Right now, we're reaching her at her office in sunny Santa Barbara. Kathleen Sharp, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, as I said in the introduction, and sometimes it's difficult to tell stories that kind of stretch out because we've got about 20 minutes. So some people are going to, you know how radio is. People get in their car and they'll be half done. So we have to find a way that this case that you examine in Blood Feud, the man who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever, that people follow it. I will continue to introduce it, but what I guess I would like from you is to start at the beginning. Who's the one man who blew the whistle and the deadliest prescription drugs ever? That's frightening. Tell me the story.
Well, the story is actually it started out very wonderfully with two guys, two good buddies on a road trip. They were salesmen for a division of Johnson & Johnson, and they were selling the first biotech blockbuster, a drug known generically as EPO, and the brand name was Procrit, and, of course, there were two other competitors, Epigen and Aranesp. And what these drugs did was really amazing. They would help the body produce red blood cells so that if you were undergoing chemotherapy treatments or if you were on dialysis, you could take an injection of this drug from a doctor and not worry about anemia. However, as our two good buddies on the road learned very slowly, this drug was not all that it was built up to be.
But that's the case often. There's a great promise, and then we find out there's a dark side. That in itself isn't unusual, is it?
No, it's actually, unfortunately, becoming more and more common to see a drug pulled off the market because the side effects are so risky that they're hurting more people than they're benefiting. But in this case, this was kind of an unusual one is because it was the first biotech drug, and originally it was approved by the blood division of the FDA, not the drug division. And so that kind of got it on the wrong foot in a way. And another big problem was that in 1993, when Johnson & Johnson's version was approved, the FDA told both companies, Amgen and J&J, to start testing the drug for safety in large patient populations. They asked them in 93, in 95, in 96, and on up into even now. It still has not been done, which is really amazing when you think of it.
Well, is that in itself unusual? Because all of a sudden I was thinking my doctor says, well, here, you have histoplasmosis or something. You know, here, I'm writing you a prescription for this, and it turns out I'm the control group. That's a little scary.
Well, it is scary, and I think what you see through these the eyes of our two wonderful characters is that the FDA does not have the chops or the teeth that it really needs to protect us consumers and patients. And I was kind of shocked during the reporting of this to learn that the FDA's top legal counsel was actually a defense attorney from the pharmaceutical industry. So whenever the staff wanted to send out a warning letter to J&J for some of its sharp marketing practices, the attorney, Daniel Troy, would immediately stop that letter and tell the staff to back off. Now, if you can imagine the frustration felt by the FDA staff who really believe in their job and are trying to do the right thing, so many of them are very demoralized. But I think our regulators have been co-opted by the very people they're supposed to regulate.
Now, the book is Blood Feud, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. My guest is the author, Kathleen Sharp. And so we have this drug, Procrit. It seems to have a lot of promise because it's going to help people that are undergoing, where they would need, you tell me. It's everything from kidney dialysis to chemotherapy to anemia. It showed great promise. And when did it all start to crash?
Well, it did show great promise. And our two guys, one was in Seattle, Washington, Mark Duxbury, very pale white guy, and the other was down in Tucson, Arizona, tan kind of juggier dude named Dean McClellan. And initially they tried really hard to create a market. At first they were only selling a few $100,000 worth of the drug, but their sales goals became $2 and $3 and even $4 million a year. And as they got more and more pressure to sell this drug, their company told them to essentially cut the corners more and more. And there were like three, I'd say, big ways that the drug, that the guys were told to cut corners. One is by selling the drug at a high sticker price, but actually giving it to the doctors at a steep discount or even sometimes free. And then what the doctors or the hospitals would do is go ahead and bill Medicare or bill Medicaid at the high sticker price, even though they got it for free, and then pocket all the profit. So that was one way they gamed it. But the more dangerous way was to promote the drug off-label, and that means in ways that's not approved by the FDA. And what you saw and what really disturbed Mark and later Dean was that Johnson & Johnson's bosses were telling all of the national reps to up the dosage to dangerous levels of 40,000, 50,000, and even 60,000 units, which was two times the approved level. And Mark knew immediately, wow, you know, this is really going to be dangerous. It's not been tested. How many patients are dying? And he began to challenge his bosses. In fact, at one meeting, a cocktail party up in wonderful Seattle, an old hotel, he went up to one of his bosses and said, bet the FDA would like to hear about this off-label promotion. Huh. And that was the beginning of the end for him.
Sure, I could imagine it was bye-bye. But he had been an incredible salesman, right? And I think it's people may know this, but a lot of us don't, and it's probably worth repeating it. In any regard, when you're a drug salesman, it's really a pathway to great rewards. Can you tell us what happens, and particularly to Mark Duxbury, who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever? That's the subtitle of Kathleen Sharpe's Blood Feud book, just released. So,
well, you know, these two salesmen actually didn't get that much of a reward financially, especially when you look at the executives and what they're pulling down. But initially Mark was making $50,000 a year, and he was put under enormous pressure to sell. He was on the road for a week or so, away from his loved ones and his family. It's almost a nomadic sort of existence, and that's the great American sort of salesman. That's what we are kind of known for throughout the world. But eventually he could, through bonuses and other gifts, earn as much as $100,000, which is, pretty nice. But more importantly, Johnson & Johnson knew how to get to the salesmen, how to sort of reward them. And if they actually made their sales goals, then they were brought to a wonderful resort in Palm Springs, for example, and given, the king's treatment. And there was a big banquet one night when all the men and women who had made their sales goals were treated like champions, wined and dined, and eventually given these beautiful gold rings that signified that they had arrived. So there were other ways besides money that these men were rewarded. But I'm not sure it was worth the price that Mark paid eventually.
Well, I was going to say, on the face of it, it doesn't appear to be anything wrong with that. A company rewarding its top salespeople, and it's an inducement to other people to work hard to meet those goals. But whenever we start dealing with aspects of our health, we start and we realize that money is intervening as one of the motivators. I think it makes a lot of us nervous, and maybe you could speak to that, the role of profit, the role of the pressure that all of this plays on pharmaceutical drugs, and how many of them get into our system and in what quantity. Like you said, the drive to increase the dosage, that's shocking.
Yeah, it is, and it's a great point that you bring up, Peter, because why do we have a healthcare system that concentrates more on profit for the suppliers than on the health for the consumers? It really makes no sense. And
Let me. I'm sorry. I said before the thing. I wasn't going to interrupt you. And then I'm just empty because people would say, "Well, wait a minute. Why? I mean, this is the system we live under, and this is a motivator to produce drugs, you know, for research and development, and to sell it, to get it into doctors' hands. And if these companies make a lot of money." That's what the system's supposed to be all about. And if there's a little glitch, like you document in Blood Feud, well, you know, there's a glitch in all systems.
Well, glitch, I mean, we're talking about what Mark estimated to be 500,000 deaths. And I have no problem at all as a business reporter with people making profit.
Whoa, wait a minute.
It should not be at the expense of the health of their patients or their consumers.
Here I'm interrupting you again. Go back over that number. What, 500,000 people may have died because of Procrit?
That's what Mark, who, you know, certainly the expert in this, estimated. And when you look at, 11, 12, almost 20 million people being given this drug globally over the last 20 years, it's not surprising, especially because for several years, Procrit and its cousins were the most reimbursed drug of Medicare. So there were, you know, $100 billion in sales these drugs have racked up over the years.
Well, one of the things that we often talk about is how much money is expended on the healthcare system and how we don't, more money goes out than the actual healthcare that we receive. A lot of other systems spend a lot less and have healthier people, and yet a lot of this just goes for reimbursements that shouldn't be. And you talk about in a recent column that you did of the extent of fraud, and that, too, is shocking. Could you maybe review those figures and give us an idea what's at stake here?
Yeah, it's really amazing because we have a profit system, there's a lot of temptation for the layers and layers of middlemen to sort of game the system. And Medicare and Medicaid are approaching $1 billion a year in expenditures, and at least 10% of that, if not more, is estimated to be fraud and waste. And so people have said between $100 billion and $250 billion of fraud riddles our system. And, of course, we, as taxpayers and consumers, pay for that, both in copay, in high health care premiums, and also in our taxes. And yet it's up to the government through the DOJ to be the tough cop on the block and really go after these companies. And that's the only way that we can really get some relief from this high fraud bill.
Well, let me just give you a personal example, and this is from private insurance. I just went to have my eyes checked to the doctor, the optometrist? No, that's the
optometrist.
Okay.
There you go.
So I said, by the way, I have a little sty on my eye. Remember when we were kids, we have styes in our eyes, and Mom would say, well, put a hot wash rag on it, a washcloth, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. They said, well, we want to make 4 appointments for you, to make sure it's not cancer, to make sure, and the guy walked out after seeing me probably for 4 minutes. And so the nurse said, pardon me, when do you want to make the appointments? And I said, I'll get back to you. So, they could make the argument that this is covering all their bases. For instance, there is the liability issue as well. Say that the optometrist said to me, yeah, just go home and put a hot compress on it. It turned out it was cancer. Right? Then my lawyer would be saying, did you recommend, you know what I'm saying? So it's sort of built into the system to max out on it.
Right, it is. It is indeed. And, you know, we have to look at the doctors, and we have to look at the hospitals. In fact, Mary Scott, one of your residents, has sued successfully in a whistleblowing case a Michigan hospital. And yet, even though the hospital has changed, Mary herself has not gotten reimbursed for the effort of suing. So it's very hard, I think, for these whistleblowers to step forward because they are so ostracized and so retaliated against. And so that's the number one thing I think we should kind of acknowledge in this. And the other is that, of course, a doctor is going to, try and benefit from the game that's been set up. And the game in the American healthcare system is stacked against the rest of us who are paying the bill. So I really do think that single-payer healthcare is the way to go. It would free our doctors and hospitals from so much paperwork, as well as sort of free us to be healthier than I think we are right now.
I never could understand why the big corporations didn't get behind this 50 or 60 years ago. It would have taken all of the expense off of them. The book is Blood Feud. My guest is Kathleen Sharpe. She's the author. And the subtitle is The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. And it's the story of how two drug companies, beginning in the 1980s, Amgen and Johnson & Johnson, partnered to commercially develop this miraculous anti-anemia drug that supposedly would reduce the need for blood transfusion. Did a lot of that, but it also may have killed as many as 500,000 people. And we're looking at this as an example of what happens within our pharmaceutical system. Let's go back to the case itself. And you, there's a very interesting attorney in this, Jan Schlichtman, I think that's how you say his name,
right,
correct?
Yeah.
And he was featured in the best-selling book, A Civil Action. It was made into this film with John Travolta. How does he figure in this?
Well, after Mark and Dean had finally blown the whistle, they spent many years trying to, alert the authorities to what they thought was wrongdoing. But they ran into obstacle after obstacle. Either one attorney would drop their case or somebody else would think, oh, no, I'm not going up against J&J, the most admired company in the world. So one day when Mark was at the breakfast table, he read a story about Jan Schlichtman, who, as you know, is a very colorful character, a guy who went up against two corporations to try and get some restitution for families who had lost their children to cancer from these polluted waters. And when Jan heard from Mark, he felt that old fire rising in his belly, and he just had to take on this crusading lawsuit. It turned out to be Jan's first whistleblowing case, and in many ways, it has almost become a civil action part two. And that is because this was in 2006 when Jan agreed to take on the case, all fired up. And here we are, 2011, and next month I'm heading out to Boston to yet another hearing on this case in which Jan Schlichtman will face off against J&J. So it's almost 8 years from when Mark filed the case in 2003, and he still does not have his day in court. And I should point out, too, that these whistleblowing attorneys like Jan work without any money until they win the case. So
sure.
It takes a real special guy or woman to step up to the plate and defend these whistleblowers.
Is Procrit still out there? Still being prescribed?
Amazingly so. It still is out there, even though in June the FDA said that anybody who is taking the drug should do whatever they can to get off of it. Yet Procrit, Epogen, and Aranesp, the other brands, big brands, are still not only being prescribed, but Medicare and insurance companies are still reimbursing doctors for it and patients.
So you may be scaring the hell out of some of my listeners with essentially a warning. I don't mean you're trying to frighten them, but...
No, I'm not trying to frighten them. And I just think that this particular case where these two men were racing against the clock, you know, to try and do the right thing against enormous odds is something that speaks to us all because, as you pointed out earlier, half of us are on prescription drugs. That means 150 million of us. And in this book, I tried to sort of lift the veil on a very secretive industry so you could really see how it works because it does affect us. And even patients who go online to try and find out again about their drug, they're often at a disadvantage because all of the information that J&J and Amgen might know about the drug is not available to the public. And this is what happened in this case, you know, for 4 or 5 years, all the studies that indicated problems with the drug were not made public until it was too late for many people.
The pharmaceutical companies say this is all proprietary information, right? And to let this loose would jeopardize their patents.
Well, no, it's not proprietary information because this, you know, the FDA is a public agency, and we as consumers are supposed to know about studies that do show risks to the drug. But I think what happened in this case is that the, quote, scientific studies that Mark Duxbury and his good buddy Dean McClellan were part of were actually marketing studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the salesmen were performing and signing up patients. They were actually looking at patient charts, which are supposed to be private, and they were selecting which patients should get the high dose of this drug. And people started dying. And Dean McClellan, for one, you know, he and I have talked about this a lot. He never realized until much later that what he was doing was not only illegal, but was causing death. And he still, you know, rues the day that he ever did that.
Why were athletes taking this drug?
Oh, that's a great little part of this book that I ran into. As you know, the Tour de France and all these wonderful bicyclists in Europe are under enormous pressure to win. And what they do is they got EPO on the black market, and they'd inject themselves with this drug, which would multiply your red blood cells so much it would give you a huge burst of energy so they could climb those alpine hills. But one of the early warning signals was that some of these bicyclists were dropping dead, at 22 with heart attacks. And so that was an early signal that Amgen and J&J sort of ignored.
All right, we're getting close to the end of this story that's recounted by Kathleen Sharp in Blood Feud, the man who blew the whistle on one of the deadliest prescription drugs ever. And you mentioned about this court case. What's the nature of the filing? I mean, is it are they asking for damages, or what's the case all about?
Well, whistleblowing cases are really kind of a strange creature. They're different from your normal lawsuit. And to be a whistleblower, you have to qualify and jump over certain hoops. But basically, a person who files a whistleblowing case is alerting the government to fraud, taxpayer fraud. And they are trying on behalf of all the citizens to get that money back. But what needs to happen in these cases is that the Department of Justice, who is the big cop in the land, has to intervene or somehow participate in the case. And this hasn't happened yet in Procrit. And it hasn't happened, I should say, in another case, very similar case against Amgen. And so there's this real mystery as to why the government right now, when Medicare is under such enormous financial strain, why the government hasn't intervened in this case and gotten back. I mean, Mark estimated $30 billion was at stake in this case. But instead, the judge has whittled down the case to just a small little area in Seattle, which is probably worth a few hundred thousand dollars, and we'll see how that fares.
And this is under the Small Claims Act, or the False Claims Act?
It's under the False Claims Act, which is this wonderful, old, archaic law that actually started in 12th century England, when the king allowed peasants to come into his court if they were going to tattle on some lord who was ripping off the crown. And then that sort of migrated over here to the United States during the Civil War, when Lincoln got so disgusted at merchants who were selling sawdust instead of a gunpowder to the Union Army. And, of course, I think a lot of us remember during the defense era of, the buildup in the 1980s, these whistleblowing cases became really big when the government could go off after defense companies who were charging us $400 for a claw hammer.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, right now what we're seeing is that the enormous number of whistleblowing cases involve healthcare and pharmaceutical companies, something like 90% of all the whistleblowing cases. So it just indicates to you how much fraud is out there and how desperately we really need to change our healthcare system.
Looking at the clock, I've got about 15 more questions in about 90 seconds. So I'm going to ask you, sort of follow up with what I asked you before. If you're a listener to this show and suddenly you're going, oh, my God, I take Procrit or one of the EPO drugs, what should they do? What are their options? Is it solely medical? I mean, in other words, should they just go to their doctor and say, get me off this?
Well, they should definitely have a conversation with their doctor. They should read my book, Blood Feud, and they should also go online and look at all the activists and consumer advocates who are trying to do something with this drug. There's a lot of activity surrounding it right now, and I think the most important thing, though, is to safeguard your health. If you're on it and you can get off it, do. And also, I would say, let's look for alternative methods besides pills or injections to sort of stay healthy.
Sure. Actually, I never ask for written comments, but if I'm on something like this that actually could be life and death, I'm interested for listeners. You can write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and if you follow up on this at all, and I will pass this along to Kathleen Sharp, who's been my guest. Her book is Blood Feud, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. It's published by Dutton, and you can go to Kathleen's website. It's kathleensharp.com. Kathleen, it's been wonderful to get this information. The information, of course, is troubling, but this is what we need to know, and you've done a real service. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Peter. I really enjoyed talking with you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Attention.
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 Rosetta Stone invites you to be a part of its biggest language learning event in history. Because in 2011, we want to help 3 million people learn a new language. That's why we're going to give you an absolutely free demo of our language immersion technology. Call 1-800-522-1164. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the Rosetta Stone solution is easier than ever before. For your free demo, call 1-800-522-1164. 1-800-522-1164.
Do you own a car you no longer want, and you don't have the time or energy to sell it? Donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Your donation is tax deductible, and your car will be towed away for free. Call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, trucks, vans, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. Call now. Your donation will help those in need. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-943-1356. Donating is easy, it's tax deductible, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher by donating. Call 1-800-943-1356. 1-800-943-1356.
101.01 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
The Riff. Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
The Riff.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything rocks.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-916-1059.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-916-1059. 1-800-916-1059.
Listen up, ladies. Right now, Bare Minerals by Bare Essentials is inviting you to participate in a special nationwide giveaway of the mineral makeup everyone's talking about. That's right. We're letting everyone who calls try America's number one mineral makeup risk-free. Just call 1-800-506-8947 to find out how. This is an exclusive radio-only offer you don't want to miss. You've probably heard about Bare Minerals Foundation. It was quoted in Glamour Magazine as a magic eraser. Allure Magazine, InStyle, and Elle Magazines, and Leaders in Beauty continue to rave about how Bare Minerals Foundation is naturally radiant and good for your skin. Now you can participate in our nationwide giveaway and see for yourself. Bare Minerals, makeup so pure you can sleep in it. Experience the foundation that started the makeup revolution. Participate in this special opportunity to try Bare Minerals Foundation risk-free. We will also send you a free gift set. Just call 1-800-506-8947 now. Hurry, you don't want to miss this exclusive radio offer. 1-800-506-8947.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, we have this big statue in New York Harbor welcoming immigrants, but, you know, this country has not really been very welcoming. Going back to 1830s, 1840s, no Irish need apply. The prejudice against Italians and Jews and other southern European immigrants, certainly not too welcoming to the people from Latin America. And another immigrant group that that figures a lot in our Detroit consciousness are people that come from the Middle East, Arab Americans. And here in Detroit, we have the largest concentration of people from the Middle East. Middle East, of anywhere in the United States. And there's a book of essays that's come my way, and it really hit me because I know some of the people that that are the editors. I also know some of the people that are mentioned. The book is called Arab Detroit 9/11, Life in the Terror Decade. And that would be for the last 10 years, right? It's edited by Nabil Abraham, Sally Howell, and Andrew Shryock.
Shryock.
Thank you. And it's Sally Howell correcting me, who's here in our studios. Yeah, okay, you're right. Sally Howell is an assistant professor of history and Arab American studies at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, and her essays have appeared in numerous places. She's a member of the Detroit Arab American Study Team. She is also co-author of Citizenship in Crisis, Arab Detroit After 9/11. Normally, Sally Howell, you think of people that are interested in a particularly ethnic group of belonging to that, and you're not.
No.
Why, how did your interest come about?
Oh, that's a long story. I don't even have a good answer for that anymore. I spent a little bit of time in Palestine back in the 1980s and 81, and really sort of realized that I had something in common with Palestinians culturally. I'm a southerner, but I had been living in the north, and when I was with Palestinians, I just felt, wow, these people are so much like southerners. They're very garrulous, extroverted. They have a lot, big focus on hospitality, welcoming people into their homes. They also have more conservative gender norms, perhaps, than mainstream Americans do. So when I was with Arabs, I just felt like I could relate to them, you know. That's not a comparison that Arabs like to hear, that they have a lot in common with American Southerners, and it's not one that Southerners like to hear either, but that's the reality of it. But, you know, so I majored in Middle East studies, and after college I wound up coming here, and I was hired to work at Access, the Arab Community Center in Dearborn. I worked there for many years before I went back to school.
Okay, and certainly the fact that you were one of the people that edited this, Arab Detroit 9/11, Life in the Terror Decade, means that that sometimes ethnic groups feel you got to be one of us to write, but or to participate. But apparently that welcoming attitude that you mentioned exists here as well.
I put in my time. You know, I've done a lot of work in this population, and people know me, and hopefully they respect my work. I would say that there are moments when my not being an Arab does present barriers. But fortunately, it didn't in the case of this book.
Well, there's always been incredible prejudices against immigrant groups, from the Irish, no Irish need apply, back in the middle of the 19th century, and then when this great wave of immigration came, same with that. I mean, groups that we think of today as pillars of the community, like the Jewish population, was ill thought of. In fact, I remember reading the police chief of New York said that Jews are criminal by their nature. And so that often immigrants coming to this country face a rocky road. And the Arab population of Detroit, even before 9/11, always faced a lot of prejudices, didn't they?
Well, I wouldn't use the word always. I think that they have, at specific moments in time, at specific points in history, they have faced hardship. There were large periods of American history, however, though, where Arabs were really invisible. And that was true here in Detroit, too. So people tend to become aware of Arab Americans at times when there's some sort of conflict taking place in the Middle East, a conflict that the United States is playing some role in. So if you go back to the 1920s, yes, there was a debate, you know, are we going to allow Arabs, at the time they were called Syrians, are we going to allow them to naturalize? At the time, you had to be a free white person to naturalize as a U.S. citizen. And there was this question, are Arabs, are they white people? Are they Asians? They come from Asia. What are they? And so a group of Arab Americans actually had to lobby to be seen as white people. They said, look, we're white people. In fact, we're from the homeland of your faith. We're sort of like the ultimate Christians. Therefore, if you know you've borrowed our religion, you have to kind of accept us and let us in. And they got in. You know, they were allowed to be seen as white people, so they could naturalize. And so there were big periods of time when they were, you know, sort of not really very visible. But after 1948, after the Palestinian-Israeli war that led to the State of Israel, you had refugees coming here from Palestine. After 1967, when the Israelis occupied the West Bank, you had more refugees coming here. After the oil embargo, after the Iran hostage crisis, even though that's Iran and Iranians aren't Arabs. In each of these moments when the United States got more involved and in some ways much more politically or militarily involved in the region, then Arab Americans became visible. After each of these incidents, the newspapers started writing stories about them. You saw hate crimes. You saw vandalism at the mosques. It sort of wasn't until the 1970s that people started organizing against having mosques come into their neighborhoods. In the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, that was not an issue.
It's interesting, Sally Howell, that you mentioned mosques, because I would assume that most people, let's put a figure on how many Arab Americans there are in the Detroit area, when you answer, is that so we have hundreds of thousands of Muslims in this area, and that frightens a lot of people.
Well, so there are two parts. One, you want the numbers, and then two, you want to know if people are frightened. So, roughly, the best estimates that we can come up with based on the 2010 census and based on data that was collected in 2003 from the Detroit Arab American Study, we're saying in this book, we're arguing that there are about 220,000 Arab Americans in the Detroit area. Now, the majority of those Arabs are actually Christians.
This is interesting.
They're either Lebanese, Syrian Christians. Those are some of the earlier groups that were here. Maronites, Orthodox Christians from what is now Syria, Lebanon, Palestine. And then there's also a very large population of Iraqi Christians who are Roman Catholic, Chaldeans.
Mm-hmm.
And we consider them part of the Arab community. Some Chaldeans, eagerly call themselves Arab Americans. Some prefer to say, no, we're not Arab, we're Chaldean, we're a distinctive population. But for the purposes of our book, we certainly include them in that bigger Arab American category. Now, if you want to know how many Muslims are, the Muslim community in Detroit is probably a little more than half Arab American, but there are also large numbers of South Asian Muslims here, of Arab American Muslims here, of Eastern European Muslims, Bosnians, Albanians who are here, so people who are ethnically white people who are also Muslims who are here, a lot of converts to Islam who are here. And the Muslim population in Detroit, I estimate to be around 160,000. So I don't think it's quite as big as people think it is, but it's still a very large, sizable, and influential population.
Let me run this one by you. The city, and I just want to check my facts here, the city with the largest percentage of Muslims, in fact, in the United States, I've heard is?
Hamtramck.
Hamtramck.
Were you trying to trip me up? Did you think I was going to say Dearborn?
No. I didn't know. I thought maybe my fact was incorrect, but that is.
No, I mean, true. I would say so. I would say Hamtramck is probably majority Muslim at this point,
right.
And if it isn't now, it will be in the next 5 or 6 years. I mean, so you've had there a lot of the Poles moved out after Poletown was destroyed, and gradually there was this exodus of Poles from the surrounding neighborhoods in Detroit up to the northern suburbs, up into Warren and then Madison Heights and that area, and then the people in Hamtramck itself also started following in that migration. And this happened at the same time that you had a large number of Yemeni Americans moving, bringing their families from Yemen for the first time. One of the, there was a mosque in Poletown, which people don't realize. There was a Yemeni American mosque there, and they moved it over sort of on the outskirts of Hamtramck, when they got their payout from the city. And then now it's a very large mosque, Masjid Moth Bin Jebel. Thousands of people go there on Fridays. It's huge. They're now in a former Catholic church. And so they were there, and when Bangladeshi started coming here because the cost of living was so much cheaper here than in New York, they moved near that mosque, and other Arabs moved near that mosque. And, gradually that they spread into Hamtramck, and Hamtramck has about a dozen mosques.
I think, too, if one looked at immigration patterns and internal migration patterns of immigrants over the last couple hundred years, probably wouldn't be too unusual what we see populations adjusting and as they assimilate. The book is Arab Detroit 9/11 Life in the Terror Decade. My guest, Sally Howell, she's one of the co-editors of these essays. It's published by the Wayne State University Press, part of their Great Lakes book series. And so explain some of this to it. When I first just grabbed it when it was sent to me as a review copy, I just saw Arab Detroit, and I said, oh, this is going to be interesting. But then 9/11, Life in the Terror Decade, it takes on a much more ominous, at least, portent to it. So give us a description of what these essays are all about and what will we find in them. I mean, I know they're quite varied.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity in the book. Well, so what we wanted to do was Andrew and Nabil Andrew Shryock and Nabil Abraham, my co-editors, produced a book that came out in 2000 called Arab Detroit, From Margin to Mainstream.
Okay.
And it was really sort of a book that tries to give a good picture of the diversity of the Arab American community, a little bit of history, and, you know, to sort of break down some of the important institutions in the community, to talk about religious institutions, about people's work lives, about their family lives, about the arts and culture of the community, really to give an overview of who Detroit's Arab Americans are. And, of course, that title, the subtitle, From Margin to Mainstream, implied that the population had been marginalized and was really moving and quite comfortably finding itself in the mainstream, sort of a community that was not having to deal with as much discrimination as Arab Americans in other places or as they themselves had faced in the past. And when the attacks of September 11th happened, one of the things that you know, we said to each other was, you know, well, you know, perhaps we should rename the book From Margin to Mainstream and Back.
Yeah.
So this book is really asking that question. Did people go from the mainstream back to the margins? And we have some answers that I think will surprise readers, that will surprise your audience. So it's true, there was a lot, the backlash here in Detroit, the sort of man-on-the-street backlash, harassment of Arab Americans, targeting them, trying to fire people at work, vandalizing businesses and institutions. This did happen here in Detroit. It did not happen to the same extent that it happened in other parts of the country, though. The percentages were down about 10-15% from what Arab Americans faced nationally.
Why do you think that?
I think it's because people know their Arab neighbors here.
Yeah.
Arabs are an important part of the community. I also think it's because our public officials, Arabs are very well institutionalized here, and they're an important political constituency in this state and in this part of the state, and our public officials, the nonprofit foundations, education institutes, all the sort of the liberal establishment of society really reached out to this population, said we're not gonna let a backlash take place here in this state, and really tried to defend, work with, protect the population. So those two things happen side by side. But there is another part of the story. So Arab Americans definitely, and Detroit in particular, because it's such a well-known community, it's not just a magnet for local people who might be prejudiced against Arabs. You know, it's not just that you can find Arabs here and all that. It's a magnet nationally. So the media came here. The media became very curious about Arab Americans. And the federal government came here. The federal government became very curious about Arab Americans. And one of the things that I argue and several of the contributors to this book argue is that the man-on-the-street backlash in Detroit was not as severe as other places, but that federal backlash, that Department of Homeland Security backlash, that FBI scrutiny of local institutions, that sort of law enforcement starting to look at Arab Americans and Muslim Americans and treat them like they're a problem, we saw more of that here than you saw in other places.
Sally Howell, there was a lot of federal intrusion into the Arab community, wanting to find out how connected were Muslim Americans and Middle Eastern immigrants. What was their connection, if any, to terror organizations, to the extent that I believe thousands of people, particularly young men, were called in for interrogations, investigations. It sounded like out of 1919, when there were these huge roundups of immigrants. People weren't sent back in the way they were then. But describe what the atmosphere and actually what happened after 9/11.
Well, there were several moments when people got questioned by the FBI, and actually it's sort of an ongoing thing. So just before we invaded Iraq, for example, Iraqi Americans were called in and questioned. And the idea was not that the government was casting suspicion on these people, but these were exploratory conversations to find out if Iraqi Americans had any knowledge that could be of use to the government. Yes, did they have any political connections that were a threat to the government, but also could they be of use? And this is sort of been the whole relationship between Arab Detroit and the government ever since, this idea that we are threatened by Arabs' perceived ties or actual ties to foreign governments, to foreign individuals, organizations, ideologies, and at the same time, we see those as a resource that we can take advantage of to support our policies, our economy, our war efforts. So there's been this sort of love-hate relationship. What my colleague Andrew Shyock, one of the co-authors, refers to as the best of times, worst of times sort of focus on this community. Yes, people were questioned right after 9/11 about did they have any questions, did they have any inside knowledge about Al-Qaeda or any of the other organizations that might that we have declared terrorist organizations. If you work for an Islamic charity, for example, if you're a board member of one of these Islamic organizations, odds are you were called in and questioned when those organizations were being investigated. A lot of them were actually shut down. A lot of them had their assets frozen. A lot of them had their computers just taken away just in the month of Ramadan, when people are actually supposed to be, that's the period of the year when most of the Islam, religious charity comes into the mm-hmm. organization. So it was really handicapping these organizations and scaring people off from working on their boards. More recently, we've had, so whenever there's been sort of an uptick of violence overseas, you'll see people here get questioned. When there's a suspicious activity that takes place, like you might remember a year ago, there were some Yemenis who sent some strange packages overseas mm-hmm. that caught the attention of the Department of Homeland Security. Well, local Yemeni Americans got questioned about this. They went to the mosques, and they went to the neighborhoods, and they rounded people up, and they said, tell us how you send things home. You know, sometimes the questions are benign, and sometimes they're very hostile and threatening and intimidating to people, and they're intended to intimidate people. And in each case, it seems to be that people are being singled out and targeted because of their race, because of their ethnicity, and because of their religion.
Sally Howell is my guest, and she has co-edited Arab Detroit 9/11 Life in the Terror Decade. It's published by Wayne State University Press. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com as well. Now, people would say, well, look it. Everybody that's done these horrific acts have been Muslims, and the idea that we should...
What horrific acts are you talking about?
Well, everything from 9/11 to the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber and...
Well, you're just mentioning the ones that have been done by Arab, by Muslims.
Right.
Well, I mean, so there have been plenty of other acts of terrorism around the world that were done by other people.
Sure. Sure. I'm giving you...
I'm just pointing it out, so go
absolutely.
Ahead. Sorry.
And there's also been very few incidents of terrorism overall. I mean, we're still smarting from what happened a decade ago, but there's certainly a lot of other incidents that have caused much more death and destruction. And so the point being is I'm saying that the perception is this is a legitimate investigation on the part of law enforcement if we want to stop acts like this from occurring again.
So the problem with that is I have a colleague, a sociologist, a political scientist who teaches down in North Carolina. His name is Charles Kurzman, and he's actually done a study of this. He's looked at all of the Muslim/Arab terror incidents that have come out of the United States in the last decade, and the amount of money that has been spent investigating these acts, and in fact a lot of these acts, if you look at them, about I'm trying to think of exactly what the statistic is, I think it's 60% of them where people have been caught in the act of trying to perpetrate some act of terrorism, there's been an FBI agent involved. There's
sure.
been an agent provocateur or someone. So the person who might have been saying that they were hostile to the U.S. government or to the U.S. population or something like this didn't actually have the means to carry anything out. And that the plan, the tools needed for the plan, all the partners you might have in the plan were all brought to the table by the FBI.
Sometimes the explosives and
thing. So it's there's a question as to how many of these ideas would have gone forward. But when you look at the amount of money that's been spent here versus the amount of violence or even potential violence that's been caught, it's really sort of outrageous. We have much bigger issues with crime just because so many people have guns in the inner city or throughout the country, not just in the inner city. And drugs are still producing a lot more crime than terrorism is. And economic fraud and all these other issues we're facing are really hurting our economy much more than this terrorism is. But there's another thing I want to talk about in the book. I'm worried that we're going to run out of time. So
I didn't realize how quickly this very interesting discussion is going, but we got about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, so there's another side to this issue that we talk about in the book. I mean, what we were trying to do is to see how has life changed for people in Detroit. And one of the main things that we argue is that it has not really changed as much as you might think. And that there has been a very positive side to all this focus on the Arab and Muslim community in Detroit. So people have had to respond to this negative attention, both from people, their neighbors, from the media, and from the government, by becoming more organized. So you have, especially in the Muslim community, you've seen, you know, people aren't allowed to give their money overseas anymore, so they're building more mosques here. They're not allowed to give money overseas anymore, so they're developing real active outreach campaigns and real active charity programs that are trying to link up the suburbs with the city. You have a very active civil rights establishment in the Arab community and in the Muslim community, which has been really empowered and become more sophisticated in this decade. You have this Arab American National Museum, which opened in 2005. So the growth and the stability of the community has actually moved forward in this last decade, right alongside that hostility, that suspicion.
Well, all ethnic immigrant groups have had to deal with how to overcome their otherness and still maintain an ethnic pride and identity. And it seems to me this is happening. You mentioned the Arab American Museum, a wonderful institution, and certainly not one for just Arab people. And of course, in terms of stereotypes, there's a whole media, there's a little section of it where they show media stereotypes and how Arabs are portrayed in movies and in the press and what have you. And I would highly recommend a visit there. And a very welcoming and extraordinarily beautiful place as well. Well, let's see. We've got a little bit more time, so I'm still a little caught on, you know, how the community, the Arab community of Detroit, is going to respond to still being under the microscope. So it's as if, I mean, there's a lot of white people that commit crimes of everything from terrorism to theft to
flying planes into the IRS down in Texas.
Everything, I mean. Except we don't get special attention. But an Arab that's not even an American citizen does horrific acts, and suddenly our fellow citizens are under scrutiny.
Well, let me I can give you a couple of examples of other things that I find troubling that are happening now and that are really more current than the book itself. So we saw in New York City there was a Freedom of Information Act request from the police department in New York City, and we saw that the New York City Police Department had CIA officers working there. They were targeting the Muslim community, Muslim institutions, very specifically for investigations, even, you know, sending agents into restaurants and bookstores and all these places, just trying to drum up some purpose for their investigation. We've seen in Detroit, too, that the head of our FBI here in Detroit has been using the fact that we have such a large Arab and Muslim population. I mean, his name is not on the documents that we received from the FOIA request here in Michigan that the ACLU received, but we assume it's the Andy Arena, the head of the FBI, who's writing these requests to the federal government for support, basically saying we have a large Muslim population here. We need extra money. We need extra resources. We've got to target these populations for our investigations. This is just straight out discrimination. We also have seen a new twist to the local dynamic of Arabs and Muslims here being just sort of ordinary citizens. We've seen that this is being used in particular by right-wing activists, by a lot of Republican activists, people like Mr. Kane, who are saying that, you know, he was saying he didn't want a Muslim serving on his cabinet. Now he's backed off a little bit from that. Other Republicans are arguing that perhaps it's not safe for us to allow immigration from the Muslim world anymore. We've had Terry Jones come here and try and burn a Quran in front of a local mosque. Now we had this, the call last weekend where people came here to pray for Dearborn to try and help convert it to Christianity. I mean, we live in a very diverse society. We've always been a diverse society. Muslims have been here from the very beginning. Tens of thousands of Muslims came here as slaves. That has not been a threat to our society, and it's not a threat to our society today.
Real quickly, about 30 seconds, if possible, I want to leave this on a positive note about our Arab American and Middle Eastern and Muslim and neighbors. Arab Detroit 9/11 life in the terror decade. People here are making it through and doing pretty well.
I would say that the community is very much empowered. It's strong. It's large. It's old. It's diverse. People continue to live transnational lives. They continue to identify very strongly as Americans, and they're not going away.
Sally Howell, thank you so much. Sally Howell is the co-editor of Arab Detroit 9/11, Life in the Terror Decade. It's published by Wayne State University Press. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Sally Howell, thanks so much for being on the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes in day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked and paid Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive Social Security disability benefits. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411 for a free consultation. Our company has the experience to help you work through government red tape and file the required documents. Even if you've been denied before or currently have a hearing pending, call us at 1-866-946-4411. There's no fee until your benefits have been approved. Remember, if you've paid your Social Security taxes for 5 of the last 10 years, your condition may qualify you for disability benefits. For a free consultation, call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-866-946-4411. That's 1-866-946-4411.
Back to the Rock.
Starts right.
101. The Riff.